Barrhaven Light Rail Transit and the rail grade separation planning and environmental assessment study recommendations. We do have a presentation, and I will.
Yes, that would be me, Councillor.
Mr. Chair, would you like the motion before or after the presentation?
I mentioned that in the beginning. We'll do the readings of the motions after the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
So good morning, Chair, committee members and councillors. I have with me today some of the study team who will be assisting me with this presentation. And from the city, it is Frank McKinney and Jabbar Siddiqui. And from Parsons, which is the consulting firm that is assisting us on this file, I have Peter Stacey, Paul Croft, and Ron Clark joining us. We have an in-depth presentation for you this morning about this complex and very important project. We wanted to bring to your attention the issues that we've examined, the constraints that we have to consider, and options that we explored, consultation that took place, as well as the resulting recommended plan. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Peter Stacey now to deliver the presentation. Thank you. Peter?
Thank you very much, Vivi. I'm Peter Stacey. I'm with Parsons. It's my pleasure to be here to walk you through the key components of this recommended plan. So this project is an important city building event. Oh, next slide. Yes, thank you. Back. This project is an important city building investment that helps the city to achieve its goals as set out in the official plan, transportation master plan, and climate change master plan. As an extension to the city's electric LRT system, it will help the city pursue the broad goals of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, increasing the modal share towards transit and active transportation, and encouraging transit-oriented development and smart growth. In doing so, this line will also play an important role in connecting communities and strengthening the two town centers at each end of the line. Ridership is forecast to be more than 11,000 riders in the peak period, and the surface will have the capability to handle additional growth growing into the future. Next slide, please. As described in this report, this project will extend the city's LRT network southerly to Barrhaven in a fully segregated corridor. Now, I'd like to draw to your attention the map that's on the screen and to get you oriented. This project starts the blue dot at the top, which is Baseline Station, located in Center Point, right opposite Algonquin College. This station is at the end of the Stage 2 line, which, as you know, is under construction. The line then runs for 10 kilometers and ends at the lower green dot on the map, which is in Barrhaven Town Center. The plan has two distinct sections. The northerly section, shown as the orange line on the map, runs between Baseline Station and the Nepean Sportsplex. In this section, the LRT is proposed as an elevated service running parallel to Woodruff Avenue right away. The southerly section, shown as the yellow line on the map, runs from the Nepean Sportsplex across the NCC Greenbelt and through the Barrhaven community within the existing Southwest Transitway corridor, all the way to Barrhaven Town Center at the end of the line. This section will be converted from bus to LRT technology and runs predominantly at grade with grade separations at all road crossings and at the Via Rail line. The plan includes seven stations. Three of these are new. They're shown as the red dots, and we'll start with Tallwood Station, which is the first new station immediately south of Baseline Station, Knoxdale Station, and then finally one at the Nepean Sportsplex. The other four stations are being converted from bus to LRT, and they're shown as the green dots. They include Fallowfield Station, which is at the Via Rail Station, Longfield Station, Strandherd Station, and the end station on the line at Barrhaven Center. The plan includes a train storage and servicing facility on city-owned lands on Greenbank Road beside the existing Via Rail overpass, as well as a 250-spot park-and-ride lot at Barrhaven Center Station. Finally, the plan includes three rail grade separations. They're shown as the three yellow stars on the southern periphery of the Green Belt near the Woodruff-Fallowfield intersection. These address a critical safety issue where Woodruff Avenue, the Southwest Transway, and Fallowfield Road all currently cross the existing rail tracks at grade. Now I'd like to walk you through some of the key aspects of this recommended plan and ask that you move to the next slide. When we began this study, we started by identifying a long list of planning and design considerations. The three listed on your screen turned out to be the most significant. Being an extension of the city's O-Train Confederation line, the plan needed to be developed using the same design standards for a fully segregated corridor with the same operational and safety requirements as the rest of the network. This includes being grade separated from all streets and rail lines crossing the corridor. We're faced with some very challenging geotechnical conditions in much of the study area. Our investigations show that north of Barrhaven, the underlying bedrock is deep, as much as 25 meters below ground. And over top of this, there are layers of permeable sands and glacial deposits of varying thicknesses, which are topped off with layers of sensitive marine clays, something we all know as Leda clay. Leda clay is easily disturbed and can't support heavy loads. A very high water table that often extends up into this clay layer adds further challenges. Finally, the 1997 Southwest Transit EA protected a corridor in the west side of Woodruff Avenue, right on the west side of the Woodruff Avenue right away, for a segregated grade separated transway, except for a 600 meter stretch between Knoxdale and West Hunt Club roads, where housing existed close to the right away on both sides. Next slide, please. I wish to speak to two of these considerations and how they influence the plan for the north section in a bit of more detail. An early study finding was that the close spacing between the side streets and the CN rail line that we have to cross in this north section of the corridor, when combined with the allowable LRT grades and clearances needed to cross either over or under them, left insufficient space between them to combine under and overpasses for grading separating this section of the line. Therefore, the choice of either a below grade or elevated design needs to be used for this entire north section. Secondly, the available corridor narrows down to just 38.8 meters between Knoxdale and West Hunt Club roads. We coined this narrow section the pinch point, and it's clearly shown in this plan, along with a previously approved protected corridor rights of way to the north and to the south of it. What quickly became evident for us from these two considerations was that determining the preferred LRT design through the pinch point was the key issue in developing the recommended plan for this section of the project. Next slide, please. So through the pinch point, we developed and evaluated six alternatives. These included both below grade and elevated designs, located both within the Woodruff Avenue right of way and beyond it. Next slide, please. When looking at alternatives located within the right-of-way, we noted the following. No existing buildings would be impacted, although in some alternatives, the LRT alignment would end up being very close to residences, as little as 7 meters away, and this would bring concerns for privacy and noise. With these options, approximately 600 meters of existing Woodruff Avenue would need to be fully reconstructed. Mobility for all modes would be impacted both during and after construction, resulting in a permanent reduction in transportation capacity on Woodruff Avenue through the pinch point. The remaining space not taken up by the LRT would be constrained for other complete street elements, such as, or including, reduced space for pedestrian and cycling facilities, snow storage, landscaping, and left-turning vehicles. Knoxdale Station would need to be located a little further north than optimal, and two sets of back-to-back curves would be introduced on the line, which are known to increase LRT wheel noise and add additional wear and tear on both the light rail vehicles and the tracks. As well, some existing utilities beneath Woodruff Avenue would also have to be relocated. Next slide, please. When looking at alternatives located beyond the right-of-way, we noted that buildings are closely set on either side of Woodruff Avenue. Alternatives to the east would require crossing Woodruff Avenue twice, again, introducing two sets of back-to-back curves that increase noise and wear and tear in the system. And major utilities running underneath Woodruff Avenue would be impacted, as well as above-ground utilities, such as Ottawa Hydro's high-voltage power line shown in this picture. On this basis, east side choices were screened out early on in the study process. Next slide, please. Alternatives to the west lined up with... Alternatives to the west lined up with the protected corridors north and south of the pinch point with no back-to-back curves needed. Knoxdale Station could be more ideally located, and the two major and the major utilities running underneath Woodruff Avenue are not impacted. The alignments are located physically closer to the large Hydro One steel towers on the west side of the road, which affords them greater clearance under the, their transmission lines, which, as you can imagine, they sag as they cross the road. Finally, alternatives to the west do not impact any mode of travel on Woodruff Avenue, both during and after construction. The road does not need to be fully reconstructed. Next slide, please. The geotechnical conditions that I introduced earlier prevent significant challenges when considering any below-grade alternative, regardless of whether you're in the right-of-way or beyond it. Below-grade options would extend into the permeable layers beneath the clay, well below the existing groundwater level. As such, they require building a completely watertight facility for the full 2.4 kilometers length from baseline station to the Nepean Sports Flex, which is both costly and complex. Maintaining that watertight integrity over the service life of this infrastructure would be a significant challenge. Any leakage would be very difficult to find and very costly to repair. More importantly, it could lead to the lowering of the surrounding groundwater, potentially resulting in the settlement of buildings, roads, and infrastructure for as far away as 250 meters on either side of the corridor. And this could occur not only during construction, but over many years, resulting in damage years after the LRT is built. Next slide, please. As we show in this image, these watertight walls of a below-grade facility would also effectively cut off several major underground utilities that would be crossing the corridor. These include large storm sewers, like the 1800 millimeter diameter storm sewer shown here in green, and sanitary sewers, such as the Linwood Collector, which is the main connection from Kanata to the RO Pickard Treatment Facility, along with many other smaller sewers and water mains. Many of these would require significant and costly relocations and diversions to connect elsewhere. So in conclusion, below grade options would bring notable risk to the city of Ottawa for the lifespan of this investment. On this basis, our study team does not recommend below grade options. Next slide, please. Elevated alternatives, on the other hand, avoid these geotechnical and construction risks and those utility conflicts. They're also less technically complicated to build, and this is our recommended choice. Next slide. Based on the analysis, an elevated LRT west of Woodruff Avenue was selected as a recommended design for the entire north section between Baseline Station and the Nepean Sportsplex Station. Next slide, please. This recommendation has the following benefits. It is the shortest, straightest alignment that permits Knoxdale Station to be optimally located to create opportunities for transit-oriented development. The straight track alignment does not introduce the ongoing system and operational impacts and wear and tear associated with the two sets of back-to-back curves required for any alternative within the right-of-way. Travel times are not impacted since trains won't need to slow down through these curves, and associated wheel noise that is difficult to mitigate is avoided. It results in a facility that is well separated from residential buildings on either side of Woodruff Avenue. The elevated design provides an opportunity for animating, programming, or landscaping the space underneath for the community benefit, as suggested here. It takes no space away from the Woodruff Avenue right-of-way. It leaves the full width of the right-of-way available for complete reconstruction in the future. And finally, it does not require fully rebuilding this section of Woodruff Avenue, and as such, it maintains the capacity, the existing capacity, for all modes. Next slide, please. The recommended plan will require acquiring a 20 meter strip of land on the west side of the Woodruff Avenue through the pinch point. Construction of the LRT will require the removal of 120 units spread across the three private properties affected. The affected 120 rental units are owned by two private companies. As part of the consultation process, the owner of the property located at the northwest corner of Woodruff, of the Woodruff Majestic intersection, submitted a letter through their solicitor indicating they are not supportive of an option that would require their client's land as it would affect their business and their future intensification plans. This is a short-term risk for the community. Since construction is many years away, the city will work to keep landowners and residents informed of the project status and timelines. The staff report details how the city will also work with its affordable housing partners and private sector developers to find suitable housing alternatives. Finally, the rendering illustrates a concept of how the surplus land parcels left over after the 20 meter widening is taken and the associated buildings removed could be infilled with new dwellings. Next slide. At this time, it's important to reiterate that the study evaluated alternatives that were located within the Woodruff Avenue right-of-way and that did not displace any private rental dwellings. On your screen here, you'll see a map that illustrates the alignments evaluated through the pinch point. The white box on the left side portrays Knoxdale Station. The blue line running straight, running south straight across your screen is the recommended line of it. The red line represents something we called alternative three, which would run down the middle of a reconstructed Woodruff Avenue. The green line represents our alternative four, which would run down the west side of the of a reconstructed Woodruff Avenue. Next slide, please. Based on our study findings, these are not recommended because of these five reasons. Firstly, they would require complete reconstruction of a 600 meter segment of Woodruff Avenue. Next, they would result in a constrained right-of-way that is unable to achieve complete street design objectives for any potential future full complete street reconstruction. Thirdly, they would diminish the capacity of Woodruff Avenue for all modes. For example, they would leave insufficient space to provide bus transit priority lanes, and some existing vehicle left turn lanes would need to be removed. Next, they would have notable transportation impacts to the arterial road and transway during the construction period. And this is one of our city's vital north-south arteries. Finally, they would introduce back-to-back curves in the rail line, which in turn would require trains to slow down and as such reduce the travel times for riders. And more importantly, the curves in the track will create a risk of wheel noise and cause wear and tear on the vehicles and tracks. This in turn would result in community noise concerns and would add to the long-term maintenance and operating costs of the facility. Furthermore, alternative four would bring the LRT infrastructure to within 7 meters of existing residential buildings. This would create long-term concerns regarding privacy, noise, vibration, and overall livability for these residents. This is because the overhead LRT line would be just beyond the private amenity areas of the dwellings that back directly onto the corridor. So our study team has concluded that these concerns cannot be reasonably mitigated. And on this basis, on final analysis, our final analysis does not recommend any alternative located within the Woodruff Avenue right-of-way. Next slide, please. So now let's turn our attention to the three new elevated stations in the plan's north section. Each is situated to optimize transit connections to the surrounding communities. At each of these stations, passengers will access the station platforms by stairs, escalators, and or maybe elevators from ground level. And there'll be a plaza at the main entrance that'll provide opportunities for seating, landscaping, public art, bicycle parking, etc. The designs will meet all applicable accessibility standards. This image shows Tallwood Station, located at the southwest corner of the Woodruff-Tallwood intersection, adjacent to the City of Ottawa Archives building. It also shows the multi-use pathway running parallel to the elevated guideway as it extends south along the west side of Woodruff Avenue. And in the distance, you can see that the LRT line crosses over the CN rail corridor before approaching, the next slide, Knoxdale Station, which is shown in this image. This station is situated in the northwest corner of the Woodruff-Knoxdale intersection. You can see the parallel multi-use pathway is shown beside the guideway again, and along with the new pathway, there are new connections to the residential community fronting onto Beechcliff Street, which is the street in the foreground. The green space between the LRT and Beechcliff Street is city-owned land, currently zoned as residential, which ties back to my earlier comment about creating opportunities for transit-oriented development. Next slide. The third new station is the Nepean Sportsplex Station, located on the west side of Woodruff Avenue, just south of the main access to the Sportsplex and the NCC Greenbelt lands. It incorporates an enclosed bridge, allowing safe passage to and from the station over Woodruff Avenue. Here, the multi-use pathway that runs alongside the LRT alignment will switch over to from the west side of Woodruff Avenue over to the east side, where it'll connect with the existing NCC pathway network and pathway that runs along the east side of Woodruff Avenue all the way across the Greenbelt down through Barrhaven. Next slide. So now I'd like to discuss the south section of the plan, which includes conversion of the existing Southwest Transway and the new rail grade separations. Next slide. Currently, Woodruff Avenue and the Southwest Transway, which are the two yellow stars on the right side of this plan, and Fallowfield Road, the other Yellow Star, cross the Via Rail tracks through signalized at-grade crossings. The three new rail grade separations will be bridges crossing over the existing Via Rail tracks, which will remain at-grade below. These bridges address a critical safety issue by segregating the roadways, rapid transit corridor, and pedestrian and cycling facilities from the tracks below. Consultations with the NCC have been ongoing throughout the course of this study, and our planning and design efforts have been focused on mitigating any impacts of both the LRT corridor as well as these bridge crossings on adjacent NCC lands. Next slide. Minimizing the lands required for the grade separations has been achieved by using long multi-span structures with smaller, lower approach embankments. These have created large open spaces underneath, which speak to the NCC's focus on the visual environment by allowing for light penetration below, and the lower embankments are compatible with the rural character of the adjacent farmlands. All accesses to existing NCC properties, have been maintained. The plan maintains the NCC's existing capital pathway network and provides the opportunity to connect these existing pathways on the east side to their proposed future Black Rapids Creek pathway, part of their Greenbelt pathway network. The plan includes two new eco crossings, one for aquatic species and small mammals through an extended culvert, similar to the picture here shown with the critter shelf, while larger animals will use the open spaces underneath the new overpass structures. Next slide, please. Next slide. So this is an image looking southwest showing the Woodruff Avenue overpass on the east side with the Barrhaven LRT overpass just beyond on the west side of the road, west side of that overpass. Fallowfield Station is off in the background. These are two separate structures, but they'll be built at the same time. The Woodruff Avenue overpass will have two traffic lanes in each direction, and it will incorporate the NCC multi-use pathway on the near side, on the east side. We'll have an open median to allow some light to penetrate down below. The image clearly shows the long multi-span bridge that allows spaces for recreational pathways and ecological connectivity underneath, and the associated lower approach embankments that reduce both the physical and visual footprint of the project. Construction will require a temporary detour, which will be built west of these structures that will include a new temporary signalized at-grade crossing of the Via Rail line that will accommodate transitway buses, general traffic, and the NCC multi-use pathway during construction. Next slide. This is another image of these two bridges, this time looking towards the southeast. It shows the Barrhaven LRT overpass to the east of the Woodruff overpass again. The pathway showing crossing under these bridges and in the foreground is the NCC's proposed continuous east-west pathway network intended to run alongside Black Rapids Creek. Next slide. This is an image of the Fallowfield Road overpass looking northeast with Fallowfield Station again just beyond in the distance to the north. This bridge will carry two traffic lanes in each direction and the existing multi-use pathway on the south side of the road over the Via Rail and City LRT tracks. The bridge is located approximately 40 meters north of the current crossing, providing greater separation for the adjacent residential community and avoids building a costly temporary detour. It again is a long multi-span bridge with smaller approach embankments that reduce the project footprint and associated impact on NCC lands. And you can see a new pathway connection linking to Fallowfield Station from the south, crossing underneath the overpass. The existing intersections into Fallowfield Station and the adjacent shopping plazas on the south side will be reconfigured to match this new roadway geometry. Next slide. So let's turn our attention to the stations that we're converting to LRT. Here's the plan for Fallowfield Station. So again, a pretty busy picture, but just to orient you, north is to the left. So Woodruff Avenue is running left-right across the top of the figure, and Fallowfield Road is on the right with the Via Rail line running diagonally across. So Fallowfield Station Park and Ride is that triangular space in the middle. After the LRT passes over the Via Rail tracks at the top left of the image, the line is going to remain elevated, thereby maintaining access to the existing Via Rail station to the north of the LRT that'll lead into an above-grade LRT station, very similar to Herdman Station. It'll have an at-grade bus facility located immediately adjacent for bus to LRT passenger transfers. And there's a bus layup area and operator facilities, as well as a new passenger pickup drop-off area included as well. We have incorporated a new signalized intersection at Woodruff Avenue that will provide another entrance to the station that's aimed at easing congestion at the existing Fallowfield Road entrance. It will also provide a safe crossing for pedestrians and cyclists to the pathways on the other side of the road. Via Rail has been consulted throughout this study, and the station has been planned to be compatible with any future Via Rail plans, including possible integration for both Via Rail and OC Transpo as a combined facility. Southwest of Fallowfield Station, the LRT will transition down to continue at grade within the existing transitway corridor. Next slide, please. This figure, with north generally pointing to the top, shows Longfield Station, which is the next one on the line. The conversion of this station will make use of the existing stairs and elevators, but the lower level will need to be expanded to make space for things such as fare gates, ticket machines, and service rooms. The existing multi-use pathway that currently crosses through the station and also crosses underneath the Via Rail line connecting the two communities will be maintained, and all other existing pathway connections will be modified to enhance access to the station from the adjacent communities. Next slide, please. Strandherd Station is the next one on the line. Again, north is on the top of the page, and it will remain a below grade station as it is now. There are no geotechnical concerns in this section of Barrhaven, so the below grade LRT can be extended to the north far enough to allow the construction of a bridge taking Berrigan Drive over the LRT. The platforms are going to be accessed from a station connected to a pedestrian bridge spanning over the tracks that links to both the existing park and ride on the east side of the facility and the retail property to the west. South of the station, the LRT remains below grade and it will cross underneath Strandherd Drive using the existing transitway underpass. Next slide. So this will be extended below grade into Barrhaven Center Station. The platforms will be below grade, linked to an at-grade bus transfer facility that's going to provide direct connections to the future Southwest Transitway and Chapman Mills Busway, as shown in this figure. The plan also includes a new interim 250-spot park and ride lot built west of the station. It's been designed to be compatible with the current transitway station. In the long term, this lot and the station could be integrated into the proposed future civic complex planned for adjacent to the site. Tail tracks extend beyond the station platform, passing underneath Chapmanville's Drive through a new structure to permit temporary storage of trains during revenue operations. Next slide. The Belfast and Moody Road LRT maintenance and storage facilities, built as part of stage one and two, respectively, predominantly serve East-West Confederation Line operations. As they're both quite far away from Barrhaven Center, it was an additional facility is needed to save an operational cost associated with this north-south extension of the line. The chosen site is on city land on the east side of Greenbank Road, immediately south of the Via Rail tracks. It's sized to accommodate storing and performing light maintenance service, light service on 8 double car LRT trains, and it's optimally located by being directly adjacent to the LRT corridor and near the end of the line. This site, identified as 1005 and 1045 Greenbank Road, was identified in a previous study for future affordable housing projects. To mitigate the loss of this site, staff is recommending that a replacement site be identified through a separate process, which will look at opportunities along both the future LRT, Stage 3 LRT corridors. Next slide, please. The study team is engaged with many project stakeholders throughout the course of the study, as well as the general public. Generally, people support the project and they hope to see it built soon. We've also heard from those who will be directly impacted, including those who live close by and those who are concerned with the loss of the residential units within the pinch point. A noise analysis has concluded that the LRT project does not result in the need for additional noise mitigation measures. However, additional studies will be done as part of the detailed design. Visually, you will see the facility from existing residences in several locations. Due to the distance from the facility or the orientation of the buildings, we're not anticipating any privacy concerns. However, screening measures such as additional landscaping will be explored during detailed design. People want any traffic impacts to Woodruff Avenue to be avoided both during and after construction, and they support the inclusion of enhanced pedestrian and cycling facilities in the corridor, with the proposed continuous parallel multi-use pathway being positively received. Next slide. To continue, members of the community have shown interest in the planning of the space created under the elevated guideway for their future community benefit. We've also heard support for including the rail grade separations as part of this project and the importance of designing a compact footprint to mitigate the impacts on the city and NCC green spaces. Next slide, please. This is a $3 billion project in 2020 dollars. Now, depending on funding availability, this project could be implemented in two phases, with the first phase extending from Baseline Station to the north down to Fallowfield Station and Park and Ride. This $2 billion first phase would also include the three new bridges over the Via Rail line. Phase two would cost $1 billion and extend the line further south from Fallowfield Station to its terminus at Barhaven Center Station. Now, should the city wish, the three rail grade separations over the Via Rail line could be advanced prior to building the LRT project. The cost for doing that is $400 million. The Transitway Bridge has been designed to accommodate either bus or rail technologies. Finally, although the existing bus lanes at Woodruff Avenue are working well, there are some issues during the peak hours. Accordingly, a budget of $2 million has also been identified to implement some near-term transit priority measures, including signalizing the southern entrance to Baseline Station for Woodruff Avenue. Next slide, please. So to conclude, city staff is recommending this plan for approval as detailed in this report and your authorization to staff to finalize the necessary documentation to complete the study. Staff is also seeking your authorization to initiate a process to identify alternative locations for future community housing to replace the Green Bank Road site. Next slide, please. So I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to present this recommended plan, and together with staff, our study team is available to answer any questions that you may have.
Great, thank you very much for that presentation. We do have two motions. One, and I wanna thank Councillor Eglie, really working with staff. A lot of hard work went into this motion, and we'll get to Councillor Luloff to read it. Maybe Keith, you can say a couple of quick, super quick points about it, and then we'll move on to the second motion.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, can you put the motion up on the screen, please? Thank you very much. So whereas the Barhaven LRT's recommended alignment requires the removal of 120 private rental units on the west side of Woodruff Avenue between Knoxdale Road and West Hunt Club, and whereas these private rental units are not designated affordable or social housing administered by the city or by nonprofit housing providers, but they are considered affordable by the tenants and need to relocate elsewhere, could cause hardship for some who have lived in the community for many years. And whereas on January 29th, 2020, Council declared a housing and homelessness state of emergency through motion number 2614, and that this is an important issue for all levels of government to address. And whereas there's a long lead time before the Barhaven LRT is in the implementation phase, thus allowing time for residents and city to consider relocation options. Therefore, be it resolved that should the Barhaven LRT's recommended alignment be approved, the Transportation Committee recommend Council direct staff to establish a working group to examine options on how to assist the residents who are facing a future relocation because of the LRT project. And be it further resolved, this working group consists of General Manager Planning, Infrastructure and Economic Development, General Manager Community and Social Services, General Manager Transportation Services, and or their respective delegates, Ottawa Community Housing, community representatives from Manor Village and Cheryl Gardens, and the ward counselor and the counselor liaison for housing and homelessness. And scroll down. Be it further resolved that staff report back to the Finance and Economic Development Committee by the end of 2021 on the working group's recommendations, including justifications and policy and financial implications. I'll now turn it over to Ward Councillor Eglie to speak a little bit more about this motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Luloff, for agreeing to introduce the motion on my behalf. As you know, I don't sit on this committee at this point in time, and Also want to thank the chair for giving me an opportunity to say a few brief remarks before we head into the delegations. So a big thank you to any number of staff. We have had quite a number of meetings, and Steve Willis, Donna Gray, John Manconi, Stefan Jaguer have all been really helpful in coming together with this idea, as has the community. I had an excellent Zoom meeting with the community a short while ago and representatives from ACORN to get a better sense of concerns from the community. And so the idea is to come together, both staff and counselors, and I thank my colleague, Councillor McKinney, in her role as liaison, agreeing to be part of this as well, to come together with the community and generate options. I know the community, and I've heard this from many of you, and I appreciate it, don't want to hear, well, there's a long runway to sort this out. I fully appreciate that means this is sitting over your head, where you're going to live in the next number of years, what's going to happen to the homes that you currently have. So I'm in no way minimizing this, but I think that there is a will within the city, within this committee, within senior staff to work with the community and come up with a number of options to find a way to deal with this impact on your lives. And I really want to thank staff for agreeing to come back within the set out timeline, so that specter of what's going to happen isn't sitting out there for too long. So we'll have some concrete options, some concrete plans for people to discuss, which we built on, as I say, all the relevant city staff and the community, and we present it back to Finance and Economic Development Committee to determine how we proceed. So I'll have more to say about the motion after the delegations, but please keep in mind this motion, colleagues, as we hear from the delegations. This is a significant issue for them. Some of the people in this community have lived in those homes for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. It's very much their home. It's very much their community, and they're looking for us to work with them to minimize the impacts of LRT on their community. So I'll leave it at that for now, Mr. Chair, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Great. Thank you again, Keith, for all your hard work. And also, Matt Gravel puts many, many hours in trying to, you know, herd cats so we can all talk as departments. So thank you to him as well. On the next motion, it's Councillor Menard. We received this Sunday, I believe. So, Councillor Menard, did you want to go ahead and read your motion?
Yes, thanks, Chair. And recognizing the other motion came in around the same time, maybe a day or two before. This is certainly something I've discussed with Councillor Eglai and staff as well. And this is one that I think is important. What it does, and I'll read it out in a second, but what it does is allow us the time that we have. We've got time to work on this and make sure that there's clarity for the 300 low-income tenants that would be affected by this. And so I support the Eglai motion, but this motion also moves us further in that a decision wouldn't be made until we know how those folks are going to be treated and what other options may exist out there for this alignment. And so it's really in keeping with the prudence of this committee. So it says, whereas significant questions remain about the grade separation of Woodruff Avenue and Southwest Transitway, whereas alternative options 3, 4, and 6 in section 1 of corridor alignment and design alternatives may cost the city approximately the same amount of money, and whereas option 6 has less predictable costing given the nature of land deals and the potential expropriation process that are associated with this option, and whereas alternative option 6, the currently recommended option, will displace the more than 300 low-income residents, and whereas many of the drawbacks of option 3, 4 vis-a-vis option 6 in the staff report, such as concerns over wheel noise and discomfort from a curving track and the temporary disruption of vehicular traffic on Woodruff, must be balanced with the significant impact option 6 will have on the lives of over 300 income low-income tenants, and whereas any potential redevelopment of the west side of Woodruff Avenue between Knoxdale Road and West Hunt Club could allow for more housing, including deeply affordable options and thus greater density within a TOD location. Whereas many of the residents of Manor Village have indicated they were not aware of consultations and unable to locate or recall receiving buck slips advertising public consultations from the city. And whereas the new owners of Manor Village have also expressed concerns with the plan while also expressing a desire to redevelop the site with no current concrete plans in place. And whereas the residents of Manor Village deserve more assurances prior to accepting an agreement to displace their homes, considering the state and trends of Ottawa's housing market, therefore be it resolved that the direction in the report to adopt the recommended alternative, alternative six in section one of corridor alignment and design alternatives, be tabled until more complete section information can be presented to Transportation Committee. And be it further resolved that staff be directed to report back to the committee with further information and analysis of the six alternative options in section one of corridor alignment and design alternatives, and that this report include a detailed comparison of options three, four, and six. Those are all the raised options. And then this comparison addressed the moral hazard of uprooting a community of low-income tenants on the west side of Woodruff Avenue between Knoxdale Road and West Hunt Club. B, the results of a public consultation with the tenants in this area. C, potential ways to accommodate or compensate the tenants should they be displaced. And D, better understanding of the implications of increased density and redevelopment of that area in line with the direction of the City of Ottawa's new official plan. Back to you, Chair.
Great. Thank you, Councillor Menard. And before we go to delegation motions, both staff supported. I got a text from a council colleague asking.
Chair, the Luloff motion, we were worked, we were briefed by the councillors that worked on that and worked in partnership with everyone on that, fully supportive of that. The Menard motion, we did not see a draft in that, and we're not engaged, and we have serious concerns over it, and we can speak to that at your when you'd like us to speak to it.
No, I sent it to staff in advance.
Okay, so yeah, we can discuss that later, Councillor. I do want to get right to the delegations. We have approximately 14 delegations. First up is Allison Trowbridge, representing Ighorn Manor Village Tenant Unit. Oh, hey, Allison, I see you there. If you've never been here before, you have 5 minutes. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Allison Trowbridge. I am a member of ACORN as well as a tenant at Manor Village. ACORN Canada is a multi-issued mass-based union of low to moderate income people with chapters across the city, province, and country. The purpose of our union is to give working class people power so that they can have their voices heard at the highest levels of the country. ACORN is both a deeply rooted community union working on local campaigns as well as a large organization that connects working class people across the country to effectively fight the corporate practices and government policies that are at the root of most of our problems. We have 33,000 members in Ottawa and Gatineau and 130,000 members across Canada. I have lived in Manor Village for 7 years. I moved into my home as a family and shortly after I became a single mother. I didn't think my son and I would make it. And we've only made it this far because of the community in Manor Village. Over the years, my son, who is 7 years old, has had a very rocky mental health journey. He struggles through his PTSD and other diagnoses each day with the help of myself and our community. The people we are able to surround ourselves with are what keep us going. They've been there with open arms on our most exhausting days. They have acted as safety nets when my hands weren't enough. They have stepped in as restraints when my son has become so overwhelmed that he risks harming himself. Their yards have been that safe place for him to run to when he feels like his walls are crashing in. My son knows this neighborhood like no other. He knows the faces it is filled with. He knows the streets that surround it. He knows the places he can count on, and they are the only places he has ever known. Being forced to start over would mean crashing again. It would mean worrying that this could be our last meltdown that ends us. It would mean only two eyes on a little boy that is so overcome by his emotions and is forced to run. Only two legs that are only so fast, hopefully fast enough to stop him from throwing himself into the street again. It would mean two arms, hopefully strong enough to hug him just the right way to soothe him while holding up the air conditioner he's trying to rip out of the wall to jump out of the second floor window. These are the battles this community has helped us through with open arms, open homes, and care. We won't find that in another community very, very quickly or right away. And my only hope is that by the time we would find it, it's not too late for my son and I. This community is a place that makes sure everyone is all right. We are a family of families. It managed to get to this because those of us who do find our way here choose not to leave. City staff has outlined six options for the Stage 3 LRT, including ones that will not demolish our homes. I understand city staff is recommending an alternative that would, as they do not want to disrupt traffic or businesses that line Woodruff Avenue. Acorn members from Manor Village met with city staff and they told us that it would actually be more expensive to demolish our homes rather than go with another alternative, for example, Overtop Woodruff. What I don't understand is how a homelessness and housing crisis can be declared, earmarked lands for affordable housing be appropriated, and city staff still want to recommend forcing hundreds of people out of their homes. There's been insufficient consultation on city staff's part. Last year, city staff had an in-person open house about the project that at least 100 people attended. Not one person I have spoken to in my neighborhood even knew this was taking place. City staff say they consulted the community, but what they mean is they consulted homeowners around our neighborhood about our neighborhood. These buildings, city staff is recommending be demolished, are homes that hold the lives of hundreds of people and families, including me and my son. Affordable housing is unheard of. I live in a two-bedroom townhome with a backyard that I pay $12.50 a month for. I won't find that anywhere else. I pay my hydro. A lot of tenants around here don't pay that. They've been here many, many years. Again, I will never find anything like this anywhere else for this price again. I am a single mother on ODSP. I'm already maxed out financially each month with the way things are. Forcing me out of my home leaves me no other option. My son and I will end up on the street living out of our car. The price I am paying for a house to live in right now still allows me to put food on the table for my son. It allows me to have the money I need to pay for his medications since it's only covered up to 5 years of age. And it allows me to make sure he has items for school. If our homes are demolished, I cannot afford to move elsewhere, both financially and mentally. We have no options. Staying here is our only option. This is why today I am urging the committee to vote for Councillor Menard's motion. Thank you.
Great, thank you for that. I do have a question from Councillor Eglad.
Quick comment first, Mr. Chair, and then a question. Allison, I want to thank you for coming and sharing your very personal story about your son and yourself and the community with the committee. I think it's important that they hear that. My question for you, Allison, is my understanding is recently your development has been purchased by a new owner, a new landlord, Smart Living. I'm wondering if you could speak to the committee a little bit about what you understand Smart Living's plans are for your community.
As of right now, I don't have a full understanding of what the plans are. I think our task at hand right now is LRT. I feel that kind of been put on the back burner temporarily, and will take place after.
Has Smart Living been talking to the community at all?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate you again. Appreciate you coming out this morning.
Thank you. Great.
Thank you. Considering you're in the same room, I understand our next speaker is right beside you. So that makes it a lot easier. Great. And you're on mute. You just have to unmute yourself.
Hello, my name is Peggy Rafter. I'm an Acorn member and have been a resident of Manor Village for over 30 years. I came to the neighborhood because I was fleeing an abusive relationship with two kids, and it was what I could afford. I was quickly welcomed into the extremely tight-knit community that I still live in today. The neighborhood really embodies the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. People watch over each other's children and everyone knows each other. There is such a sense of safety here. We never worry about the kids because someone always has an eye on them. Even the older kids, they always look after the younger ones. Over the past 30 years, this community has become my life. I've been on the Manordale Woodvale Community Association. I've been a baseball coach. There is such a sense of togetherness here. We've been through tornadoes, fires, power shutoffs together. We've welcomed babies and been to funerals. We've had neighborhood potlucks and charity fundraisers. And we help dig each other's car out in the snowstorms. Everyone takes care of each other here. No one watches from behind a curtain, but we all come out to help each other. If this community is destroyed, all of us will be lost. I've raised my kids here and I have my grandkids here now. I pay $1,133 all inclusive for a 2-bedroom townhouse. I will never be able to find anything like that in that range again, not to mention the community and family that I'll be torn from. If I'm forced to leave my home, all I will be able to afford would be maybe a studio or 1-bedroom apartment in a high rise somewhere. This will be detrimental to my physical and mental health. I have an autoimmune disease which affects my lungs and legs. I need to be able to step outside my back door and go for a walk. I need to be able to get up and move, use the stairs, go down to the basement and do my own laundry. Going up and down the stairs is good for me. This place keeps me wanting to move and be busy and have all the kids over to play. It keeps my mind busy. This would be totally taken away if I had to leave my home. I need these people and I need this place for my health and my sanity. Why does this need to be destroyed? For traffic? We know there are other options for the track and the station. Options that would not cause so much unnecessary heartbreak. If you vote for city staff's recommendation, it will say that the city of Ottawa values convenience and traffic more than our lives, because this will destabilize families. People will end up in the streets. Our community is the kind of community that would use this train, and building it this way will get rid of us. Public transit is supposed to provide for low-income communities, not go right through them. We know there is an affordable housing crisis right now. It cannot possibly be the right decision to get rid of existing affordable housing. Please do not vote for any plan that will destroy our homes and communities. I am urging the committee to vote for Council Menard's motion today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Peggy. We do have one hand went back down. Councillor Eglon.
Sorry, just unmuting myself there, Chair. Thank you as well for coming out this morning. And I think, if I recall from the meeting we had a little while ago, you are the longest standing resident in that community. Is that correct?
There's a few that are at the 40 years.
Oh, okay. All right. So you know the history of the place and you know the community. So that feedback is important for the community, or the committee rather, to hear. So I appreciate you coming out and sharing that bit of history with us.
Thank you.
Can I ask you a question? If the city and working with the community and other stakeholders was able to come up with a plan for affordable housing in the area, what do you think of that? Not necessarily where you are right now, but close by, still access to the train and access, you say you're on the community association, access to the Manardale area. What do you say to that? If people got together, rolled up their sleeves and could come up with something that would meet those objectives?
Well, right now that's not a promise. So in all reality, I want to stay where I am. I mean, there's no promises right now.
No, you're right. There are no promises. There is a motion asking people to sit down and come up with those options, to provide those options to the community.
We'll be willing to listen, absolutely. But the long-term goal is to be able to stay where we are.
Okay. No, I appreciate that answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Oh, you have another question, Madame, from Vice Chair Leeper.
Thanks. Both Allison and Peggy. Definitely appreciate your coming out this afternoon. To follow up on Councillor Eglise's question, I just want to make sure I understand what it is that would be lost if Manor Village is expropriated or acquired and turned to rail. The things that I heard you talk about in both of your presentations, the price of the housing is obviously critical. The number of bedrooms in the units is critical. Immediate access to the outdoors is critical. And I just want to make sure I understand those, as because we may have to go down a path of trying to replace this housing. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure I understand, you know, how hard that will be. What is it that we would need to replace?
I think part of it too is the safety. You know, these are generations who have been here for lifetimes. This community, not only the actual surroundings, but the people here, is all a lot of these children and grown children have ever known. And that's where they find that security, especially in these times. You know, COVID times are not the easiest for anyone, but especially our children. And having not only a neighborhood that they know and they trust, but those people that, you know, like I said, at the drop of a hat will be there to help those children out or families. I think that's a huge one. It's not just the price. It's not just, you know, the setup of the home. It's the
people.
Yeah. It's the lives that we've actually built with these people.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you both.
And I don't see any other questions, but I did have one quick one. How is it established now? Smart Living's coming in. They're going to probably change some things. I don't know what they're going to do. I've got to be honest with you. But Peggy, you mentioned that your hydro is included and Allison's is not. Is it two different rates in there? Like, just if you could explain how that works.
When I first moved here, it was all inclusive.
Okay.
And then they started charging individual, and that's when Allie came in.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much for telling us about your neighborhood today.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Lisa Billow of the
Bilo.
Thank you. I'm butchering it there. Hey, how you doing? Okay, great. So you have 5 minutes. The floor is yours.
Okay. Hello, my name is Lisa Bilo. I've been a tenant at Manor Village for 4 years. I'm also an ACORN member. My husband and I were newlyweds living in a small one-bedroom apartment when my longtime friend and now neighbor, Diana, told us about the townhouse here. She encouraged us to move in. It was our first home, and it was in our budget. Peggy, a neighbor and friend, has lived here for 30 years. She was the first person to welcome us to the community and gave us a little tour. Everyone knows Peggy, and when you walk around with the neighbors, you'll hear everyone calling out greetings as she walks by. Seeing the community here made us feel that we made the right decision in moving to Manor Village. My mother passed away 2 years ago from breast cancer. When she was sick, there were long periods of time that we were not home because we were taking care of her or in and out of hospitals. I never had to worry about the safety of our home because my neighbors were watching out for us. Diana would come in and check on our home, and it was a relief to have one less thing to worry about, knowing our home was safe and secure. I have a 2-bedroom townhouse, and my rent is $1,075 plus utilities. My husband and I are working class, and he's currently enrolled in a part-time program at Algonquin College. If we are forced to move with the current rent being high, we would not be able to afford to stay in Ottawa. We would be forced to look outside of Ottawa. Some one-bedroom apartments are more expensive than what we're currently paying now. We would be paying more for less space. We not only have to worry about paying rent, but being able to afford our bills, groceries, and paying for school. It is becoming impossible for working-class people to live in Ottawa. We know the LRT needs to move forward, but it does not need to move through our community. We have been told we're building this LRT for your community, but what community? We will not be here to ride the LRT since the plan is to demolish our homes. We will not be able to afford rent anywhere else, let alone a pass to ride the LRT. We have heard promises of affordable housing, but there are no concrete plans. We are in a housing crisis with 12,000 people on a 10-year waiting list. How can you promise affordable homes when land has been earmarked for it is instead being used for parking for the LRT. If you are serious about these promises, solid plans would be in place and homes would come before transit. Upon hearing about the reasoning behind bringing the LRT through our homes instead of choosing not to demolish them, I have felt that we were insignificant and disposable, that the LRT is for the greater good of Ottawa, and that everything comes before our homes, and that the families here are as disposable as the buildings. This needs to change. The city needs to do better. I should not have to fight to keep my home. It should not be profit over people or families. You are not just tearing down buildings, you are tearing apart homes and families. It's not just 120 houses, it's 300, 400 people or more. These are families. We want to stay together. We want to stay here. And we have made this community our own. And we support each other. I am urging the committee to vote for Councillor Menard's motion. Thank you.
Great. Councillor Aguilar.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Lisa, thank you for coming out and again, sharing your experiences and being an advocate for your community. I'm going to ask you a similar question to something I asked some of the other presenters so far. Again, if the city does, you know, the committee does approve a committee that's jointly made up of city staff, community stakeholders, residents from your community, as well as from Cheryl Gardens. Are you prepared as a member of the community to look at options that they may come up with, whether that be alternative housing somewhere else, you know, whatever it might be, just put all the right people, all the right brains in the same room and come up with as many options as possible. Is that a process that you want to take part, be part of and to consider the results of?
It's hard for me to respond to that question in a positive way when, like I said, looking at Green Bank, for example, that was originally earmarked for affordable housing, which now has instead been, is going to be used for parking for LRT. So, you know, these promises or these plans don't seem to be real promises.
Well, what I would suggest to that, Lisa, I think the fact that the design has come up with that change, if you will, makes it even more imperative that the city sit down and have that serious discussion over the next few months, over the next year, and come up with suggestions and solutions, not only to your situation, Cheryl Gardens, but also the fact that that change has been made. So I think that actually adds positive fuel to your fire in giving the city even more impetus to having those discussions and coming up with solutions. The other thing I want to ask you about is, and I've asked this before as well, what's been your interaction thus far with Smart Living and in terms of what do you know of their plans for the properties?
We haven't heard much from Smart Living. There's been little to no contact with them. You know, they place the blame on the LRT for any future evictions that might happen. And that's pretty much all we know so far.
Okay, because when we met earlier on, a number of you, I'm not sure what you were, one of them was, a number of people in the meeting had raised the fact that you were hearing rumblings that Smart Living was going to start handing out eviction notices and moving people out right now.
Yeah, the suspicion and I think is part of their track record is to do student living, expensive student living. We are trying to focus at this time on LRT as that's our main concern today. And moving forward, we'll tackle Smart Living as we go. It feels like a little bit like we're being come at from every direction, right? Like,
sure, no, and I understand that. I understand that, and it's not an easy place to be in, and that's one of the reasons in the motion that Councillor Luoff put forward. I was very direct with staff that I wanted a firm timeline as to when options would be on the table, because I don't think it's it's comfortable or it's fair for you to sit and your neighbors to sit there with this uncertainty over your heads. So that's why that very firm deadline is in there for staff to come back with recommendations as to how to help the community and how to mitigate the impact. So I'll just leave it at that for now. But just to let you know, we are cognizant that it is sitting out there and it's sitting over your heads. And, that's why we want to try and find a solution to this. So thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Councillor.
Great. We have Councillor Menard.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Chair. And I think, the answers to the questions from Councillor Egley really show why we need a plan before we approve the expropriation of these places. That's the whole point, is make sure there's a plan, make sure people are comfortable with that before we make this type of decision. Lisa, I'm wondering how you heard about this. Did you participate in any discussions about it in advance? Was there other consultations that took place with the 300 residents in this area? Can you give us more on that?
In regards to Smart Living or the LRT, sorry?
No, the LRT.
Actually, my first, information I received was through a pamphlet that was handed out by, I'm not entirely sure who, but that was the first time I had gotten information about the LRT. It was from a pamphlet saying that it was coming through our neighborhood, 120 homes going, and we started talking amongst each other, amongst the neighbors. And then someone, I can't remember if it was Clark or someone, had reached out to Acorn so that we could get more information and understand where we stand and what our rights were, and just kind of went from there, Zoom meetings and getting our community together.
Okay, thanks very much for that.
Great. I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much, Lisa, for coming out today.
Thank you.
Next on deck, we have Park Hill from the Manor Village. Is a Manor Village resident as well. There you go. I see you, Clark. All right, great. You have 5 minutes. The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. Hello, my name is Clark Hill, and I'm an Acorn member and a resident at Manor Village for about 4 years. I moved to the neighborhood with my family because it's a safe, family-oriented, and it's affordable. Everyone knows each other here, and we all stick together, and we help each other all out when needed, right? There's virtually no crime in our neighborhood. You don't have to worry about letting your kids go out to play. There's backyards for them to play, and we all watch the kids together. If the LRT is built through Manor Village and our homes are destroyed, families will here suffer. Most people that live here will not be able to find anything affordable, anything similar to what we have here. Anyone else in the city? There's nowhere else in the city. I mean, there is nowhere else in the city. Many will have to leave Ottawa, and some may even end up on the streets because they can't afford the new homes. We know the city has outlined other options that will not demovict the residents at Manor Village. You have the ability to build over Woodruff Avenue. The ability is there. The responsible decision is sticking with your own program the City of Ottawa created in 2018 called Everyone Counts, and more towards ending homeless and not adding to the homeless count due to the negligence and improper planning. Since this report was made in 2018, things have gotten worse for low-income families. So the real tough decision is to be responsible and to stick to your city's own plan for ending homeless by 2024. And I see no sign of that happening. Please make the right decision in parallel with your own program, Everyone Counts, and go down Woodruff with the train and sustain the much needed affordable housing for Manor Village. Please do not contribute to the problem and go against your own programs that the city created. Canada is in heavy debt due to COVID already. Asking for more money than you need in these hard times Canada faces is irresponsible. I would like you all to think of the human aspect of people living at Manor Village and their struggle to survive in this harsh environment and the pain and suffering each day the city of Ottawa would be causing them and their families each day. you have to worry about becoming homeless from the city's decisions or by allowing the property management company to do the dirty work on their behalf of rent evictions. We're urging the city transportation councillors to make the easy and right decision and not voting for any recommendation that will demolish homes in Manor Village. Therefore, I'm urging the committee to vote for Councillor Menard's motion. Thank you.
Councillor Eglai.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Clark. Just one really quick question. You said allowing the property management company to do the dirty work. I'm not sure what you're referring to there. Maybe if you can clarify for the committee.
Yeah. What I'm referring to there is in a lot of cases when developers want to get rid of tenants, they'll put out what's called a Form 13. And basically it allows the developer to rent evict a tenant to allow for future development.
So you're talking about what Smart Living might do in the near future?
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you. Anticipation.
Sorry, you glitched out there for a second. I didn't hear that answer.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Hill, great, thank you. I don't see any other members asking. Just real quick, you've read the Menard motion, I assume?
Yes.
Okay, and what day did you receive that motion?
Actually, I just received it when he was speaking about it right now, but...
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you very much for that, and thanks for your delegation today. Next up, we have Trevor Hache, and Trevor's no stranger to City Hall. We did receive a submission this morning, Trevor, just so you know, and we put it up on our network drive so everyone, all council members have access to it, the one that you submitted at 9 this morning. So you have 5 minutes and the floor is yours.
Good morning, members of the Transportation Committee. I guess it's afternoon now. I wanted to just mention, obviously, the important work that was done previously by the Interdepartmental Task Force of Affordable Housing near Transit Stations and the Healthy Transportation Coalition, Ottawa Acorn, many thousands of individuals and many, many dozens of organizations have urged the city to prioritize building affordable housing near rapid transit stations, because we know with this Barrhaven route, there'll be $10 billion of public money being invested in phases 1 and 2 and 3 of light rail transit in Ottawa. And with that public money being invested, it's really of critical importance that people of every income level can live close to those stations. It would be a real shame if only people who can buy expensive condos can live close to those stations. And you all know we're in an affordable housing and homelessness emergency in Ottawa, and that is because governments of every level, including the City of Ottawa, for too long have been abdicating their responsibility related to addressing the affordable housing and homelessness emergency. Even though we're 2 days away from the budget being tabled, there's no clarity whether or not the city is going to be making a meaningful investment in addressing this emergency. So there's been some good progress in the last two budget cycles, but the scale of the problem is so massive that even $15 million in the last two budgets is really nothing compared to the scale of the problem. And what's really worrisome is that you're going to, by proceeding to approve this plan, you're going to make the situation worse. And there's an opportunity cost there. So the money that would otherwise go into addressing the 12,500 households on the centralized waiting list for affordable housing will instead be diverted to this new thing that you're creating near this stage 3 LRT station. So you won't be able to address that existing emergency because you're going to make it worse. And so there's a real opportunity cost there. There's the human cost. And again, unfortunately, even when that report was tabled at FEDCO in April 2019, there were two sites that were removed from the list of 20 that the city had identified near rapid transit stations for affordable housing. Because you're waiting for the Orleans Town Center secondary plan to be completed. And now you're going to add a third site. So now we're down to only 17 sites across the city near rapid transit stations where affordable housing could be built. So it's very problematic. And I want to urge the councillors to recognize today that you're going to make the situation worse, to recognize that you're going to have to invest even more money to address the emergency, because you are making it worse. And unfortunately, the city's really dragging its heels on things like a rental replacement bylaw, on an inclusionary zoning bylaw. And so the private market situation is also horrendous right now for rentals. For every 15, for every one affordable housing unit that governments have built over the last number of years, we're losing 15 affordable private market rental units on the private market. And this is backed up by research from Carleton University. And so the emergency is real. And I don't think that today's decision, which I'm certain is going to go in favor of, what's going to hurt the community members that you've already heard from. It's just very unfortunate, and we need to be much more thoughtful. And so I too want to voice support for the Menard motion. And I think a plan should be in place, and we need to see much more in terms of investments from the city of Ottawa to build the affordable housing that we desperately need. And I hope it's been made clear to you today that the residents are telling you they don't want to leave. They don't want to leave their community. They have a very strong social fabric in that neighborhood. And I hope you've heard that today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Trevor. Councillor Fleury.
Yes, thank you, Trevor, as well. Mr. Chair, my question would go, I have a question to staff on the delegation as it relates to some of the comments around the affordable housing lands. Is it appropriate to get clarification on it just to make sure that we understand what's at play here? There is some reference here that I want to make sure, I want to understand if they are facts or if they're just questions.
Councillor, just out of fairness to other colleagues, because I know they have very similar questions, this seems a little more specific to staff. If I could ask you to hold that till we get to the staff question component, sure. Certainly make note of what Trevor has said, and we'll bring that back, and I'm sure staff will answer that. I had a quick question, Trevor. First of all, I love the quilts in the background. Fabulous. Just wondering, knowing Councillor Menard does support Councillor Eglise's motion, do you also support Councillor Eglise's motion?
Well, I think it's, kind of a plan that was devised in recognition of a lack of a plan. And I think it's unfortunate that these residents weren't properly consulted. I think that I'd be supportive of Eglise's motion if,
great, thank
there
you.
Was if there was actual money behind it to ensure that the housing is going to be built. But the residents don't want to leave, and I hope that's been made clear.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. No, I think there's a lot of great delegation speaking in favor of that today. Anyway, thank you for that. Looking on the board, no further questions for you, Trevor. Next up, we have the Barrhaven BIA.
Hello, councillors and committee. My name is Jason McDonald, and I'm the chair of the Barrhaven BIA. I very much appreciate the opportunity to be able to address you today. Dear committee members, Ottawa suburban communities play a vital role within the larger context of our city and offer the ability to be sustainable communities that are complete with work, live, and play opportunities. For more than 15 years, the ongoing focus of the Barrhaven BIA has been for long-term employment-based job growth and protecting the core commercial area of Barrhaven. Both employment growth, non-retail, and accompanying infrastructure improvements are needed to foster an ideal, sustainable environment and sustainable community. Barrhaven has been well planned and has grown to fulfill all of the regional municipality of Ottawa-Carleton, City of Nepean, and City of Ottawa goals in creating a vibrant community. Offering a full range of housing types, institutional and recreational uses, supportive businesses and retail, and major employment centers. The concept of a rapid transit system along the Woodruff Corridor from Centerpoint to Barrhaven has been embodied in planning reports and environmental assessments and reflected in individual development approvals for over 25 years. Barrhaven has been the fastest growing area of the City of Ottawa, both residentially, institutionally, retail, and employment-wise, since amalgamation, and the secondary plans for the Barrhaven Town Centre and other areas of Barrhaven have been designed and implemented in anticipation of an upgraded transit solution. The careful consideration of the development of Barrhaven's downtown is very important. We need the LRT to service our Marketplace station and eventually even further south to a future Cambrian station with an off-road dedicated corridor from Baseline Station through Fallowfield Station. Much of the required infrastructure and land use planning south of Fallowfield is already in place in anticipation of an upgraded transit solution. In order to become a complete and vibrant community, Barrhaven needs an effective and efficient rapid transit system. Thank you very much for this opportunity. If I may also, I'd like to address sort of terminology, and this is sort of separate from my role as the BIA. I own a real estate company here in Ottawa as well. My building is actually located just down from where the depot would be located, which personally I don't consider to be good, viable land for affordable housing. It's on a hill, it's by train tracks. It's not what I would call something ideal that we should be setting up affordable housing in. That being said, the other concern I have is referring to the affordable housing along Woodruff as affordable housing. That is privately owned. And I can assure you that that developer, especially in the real estate circles, has already been talking about what they plan on doing with that their property. And you can be rest assured that no matter what decision the City of Ottawa makes in regards to its alignment of the LRT in that area, the private owners will, and well within their rights, try and take advantage of that, especially in the form of redevelopment. And I think the bigger concern would be, if you don't go that route, how will you protect the developer from redeveloping those lands? I am in support of Councillor Egley's motion. I do struggle with Councillor Menard's in that it frames this as something that can be protected when really it can't be. It's privately owned. And therefore, I think making sure that we have a solution for affordable housing, which I completely concur with, we absolutely must do something about affordable housing here in Ottawa and across our country. I just don't think that this is an area where the city has that ability to do so. So therefore, doing Councillor Egli's proposal of coming up with a clear solution, I think would be the most advantageous route to go. And of course, for the residents, they're trying to protect what they have, not knowing what the potential is of what they could have through a new and effective social housing location for them. And I very much sympathize with their situation, and their sense of community is admirable, just as ours is here in Barrhaven. So I completely understand that. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you very much, Jason. Councillor Menard.
Thanks very much, Chair. I just wanted to make sure I understand. Jason, you had mentioned, around my motion, are you aware that it would allow the rest of the plan to go through, but would hold off on the Woodruff alignment until a solution is found and then come back to committee?
Well, and I do, Councillor Menard, and I just think that there's, I guess my biggest concern as a Barrhaven resident and as a lifetime Ottawa resident is the number of delays and hold-offs on projects that I've seen occur within the city, especially in the Barrhaven area. So my concern would be, again, as our growth continues to skyrocket, that in itself, Councillor, starts to eliminate affordability. And we've seen it in Kanata, we've seen it in Barrhaven, Riverside South, where, you know, the average cost of a townhouse is $500,000. So I think if you're suggesting that expediting Councillor Egli's proposal to make sure that there are definitive lands that are identified and I guess reserved for the discussion, that would give me comfort. I'm not sure if in regards to what you're suggesting is that it's carved in stone, the land is purchased and the plans are made before moving ahead. That would be a concern of ours as a community. And we're in support of what your goals are, what you're trying to achieve here, which is to create affordable housing. And again, I can't stress it enough that I concur with that aspect. I work this 24/7, 7 days a week, 365. Affordability is disappearing. The question is that this area does not create affordability. Those residents have low rental rates because of the duration that they've been there, not because the city has assisted them in those low rental rates, and not because the landlord, out of the goodness of their hearts, has provided those low rental rates. It's because they secured those properties at those given time periods, and due to the Landlord Tenants Act in Ontario, the landlord is only able to increase the rent by statute increments annually that are defined by that board. But what you will see and what you've seen everywhere is these developers, they'll exactly like the other speaker had said, they'll do a rent eviction or whatever it was that he called it. They'll just do a substantial renovation, evict the people, and those will be renting out at $2,400 a pop. And of course they have the right to do that. It is their private land. They are, you know, they can do what they want with that land. It's how do we best achieve the solution that I think we all want, which is to create affordability. And nobody wants to take this wonderful sense of community away from the people in Manordale. My mom grew up there. My mom taught there. I understand, you know, the fear of what that creates. But with Councillor Egli's proposal, potentially we could identify an area that would give them some light at the end of the tunnel where they could say, wow, that would be nice. And of course, modern living, you know, Councillor Menard, all you have to do is Google that location. And if you look at the patchwork of roof repairs, that is an indicator as to the duty of care for the current landowners, right? When they're doing just bare minimums to keep these things alive. This is, I hate to coin the phrase of slumlords, but being a slumlord is profitable when you bleed down a property until it hits the ground and then you're able to renovate it and structure it into something that creates you a lot more profitability. So I just think your efforts and time is better spent in terms of looking for a solution for this. And I do think that actually taking that development down and creating another solution is in the best interest of those residents, because it will give them something more appropriate, something modern, and obviously something that would require a lot less maintenance.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be careful about saying that it's in their best interest that their homes be expropriated. I think what I'm saying and what you're trying to, I think, indicate is that we need a solution on this. And the problem is we don't have a solution or a plan right now, but we're being asked to approve something before that exists. And so that's what we're trying to accomplish here. Councillor Egli's motion should pass, as should mine, which would then provide us that ability to come up with that solution and come back to committee once it's found, not beforehand. I appreciate your delegation.
Thank you, Councillor Menard.
Thank you, Jason, for coming out today. Next up, we have Katie Burkholder-Harris of the Alliance to End Homelessness in Ottawa.
Good afternoon, councillors. Thank you for your time today. My name is Katie Burkholder-Harris, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alliance to End Homelessness in Ottawa. The Alliance is a member-based nonprofit organization representing over 55 agencies and people in Ottawa that work with people who are homeless and at risk of homelessness. We are dedicated to the citywide prevention and end of homelessness through public advocacy, education, and system planning. This city council is the first in Canada to acknowledge the housing and homelessness emergency that faces constituents in our city, and we commend councillors for this decision. We have a waitlist of 12,000 households who need affordable housing and wait times that range between 5 and 19 years. Homelessness is a public policy choice that was made over 30 years ago due to federal de-investment in affordable housing. While we are glad to see federal commitment once again to building new affordable housing, We are treading water and try and keep up as we lose more affordable housing than is being built. In 5 years, we lost almost 8,000 affordable units, while only 1,000 new affordable units were added in Ottawa. Simply put, we are losing ground. City Council is being asked to vote on an LRT extension that would mean demolishing 120 residential townhomes and dehousing 300 tenants to make way for the future Knoxdale station. We understand that the intention to offer affordable housing to the hundreds of residents who would be displaced, but there are no specifications on how this would be achieved. Without more clear information on what this would mean and how it can be guaranteed to the tenants of Manor Village, this decision should not be made today. We hear the city's concern that the LRT will be louder and more expensive if the tracks need to be turned. I want to remind this committee that homelessness is also expensive, and increasingly so. We are currently spending $3,000 a month per family in a hotel room due to a lack of shelter space, and the numbers continue to rise. As well, there are spin-off costs, including higher use of emergency services, and most importantly, a loss of stability for families that creates cycles of poverty, which become increasingly difficult to escape. Ottawa is already home to the largest mass eviction in Canada, with the Herongate evictions. It is further proof that homelessness is created by policy and planning decisions that fail to consider the long-term consequences to families and communities. It is in this context that the Alliance strongly urges this committee not to pass any Stage 3 LRT option that dehouses communities. We can end homelessness in Canada. It's happening in other communities. However, we must make decisions with the long-term vision for the kind of city that we all want. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for that today. I'm just looking, Katie. I don't see any hands up. Thank you very much for your delegation today. Those following along, Lise Sarazin with RGA. Unfortunately, had an emergency. She did want to make mention that if she was speaking, she was going to speak in favor today, and we have correspondence from her. On to delegation number nine. It's a Khalid Biag. I'm totally butchering that, I'm sure. The city.
It's Khalid.
Khalid! Ah, God, yes. I was in the ballpark. All right. City for All Women Initiative.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone. I'm Khalid, Community Engagement Coordinator with City for All Women Initiative. I am speaking today to support everyone who's already spoken before me. And as many of the people who have spoken before me, I'm here today to support the residents and tenants of Manor Village, who, along with facing a public health crisis and dealing with increasing stresses of the pandemic, are now having to fight for their homes. As the presentation today defines, the removal of these residents is a short-term risk. I would like to point that any removal of affordable housing in the city is not a short-term risk. For if it had been, we would not be in the midst of a housing emergency that we are in today. While motions and actions to find alternative for residents sound good on paper, we all know the state of rental housing in Ottawa, particularly when it comes to 2 to 3 bedroom homes that adequately fill the need of families. Residents being removed are living on low income in single family structures on income assistance, are primary caregivers in their family and are dealing with health challenges. I'm personally appalled that challenges these tenants will be dealing with due to being uprooted from their communities and neighborhoods has been brushed over as a short-term risk in the technical report. The City for All Women Initiative for years now has been standing with communities, particularly on the issue of housing. Through many conversations with community members all across Ottawa, it has been made clear to us that plans and consultations of new affordable housing often don't match up with the real on-the-ground option available to people and the challenges that they have to face when searching for these options. Evidence from the city's own report shows that there is an increase in the overall use of family shelters, and there's a lack of options available for families particularly. Numbers from a report that was commissioned by Councilor McKinney earlier this year stated that we were at around an $800 million gap in getting our core housing need down by 50% and eliminating chronic homelessness fully. Trevor, who spoke before me, has already spoken to the discrepancy between the loss of private affordable housing and every new affordable housing unit that comes up on the market. Today, we stand with ACORN members and tenants of Manor Village today to stress that the uprooting of this community is unacceptable, and these tenants deserve to continue living in their communities with dignity. The city consider alternative options for the new transit station that does not involve uprooting and demolishing of Manor Village community. Many residents who have already spoken have pointed to the lapse in city's consultation process that seem to have missed the very people whose houses were up on the line. When the city declared a housing emergency earlier this year, it was a much needed respite for many of us who believe that this was going to be a waking moment for many councillors and decision makers in this city. While in an ideal world, the city would be adding power to residents' capacity to stand up against rent evictions and landlord property owner led evictions, unfortunately, we have a case here where residents are having to plea against the city itself to keep their affordable housing in community. The expansion of our light rail system is an important step forward for the future of Ottawa. We support it fully and wholeheartedly, but it should not under any circumstance come on the backs of low-income residents who are already struggling with multiple challenges and who rely on these homes for their well-being. We support Menard's motion on having a plan before the decision today is voted on, and the residents need to lead a solution that will work for them, and we support them wholeheartedly in this pursuit. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your presentation today. Seeing no questions, thank you for coming out. Next up, we have Claude Brulé, Algonquin College president. I'll just give it 1 second for Claude to get into the room.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely, Claude. You have 5 minutes. The floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Chair Tierney, members of the Transportation Committee. I'm pleased to be here this afternoon to speak in support of item 3 on the agenda, the Barrhaven Light Rail Transit Planning and Environmental Assessment Study. With more than 20,000 full-time students, Algonquin College is the largest polytechnic in Eastern Ontario. We provide learners with unique opportunities for experiential and personalized learning. We share the opinion that extending the light rail network will allow more people to share its benefit. In any given year, between 7 and 10% of Algonquin College students' population lives in the Barrhaven area that would be served by this LRT extension. It will connect people to opportunities and opportunities with people. And despite the pandemic and these difficult times, the capital is changing and growing. The LRT project is certainly one of the city's most ambitious city building projects to date. At Algonquin College, we embrace ambition, whether it's in the leading edge technology that we develop with industry in our applied research labs, or the systems they think about when they imagine the landscape of home and community healthcare to meet demographic change in our city. Our students are thinking about connections and interconnections. We're excited to be part of the wave of growth and expansion across the city, because that's what the discussion today is about. As I mentioned before, city building. And city building is more than just a physical building of structures. It's about building new initiatives. It's about building stronger future leaders and better networks, whether they're transportation networks, 5G networks, or people networks, networks that connect us beyond our city and around the world. We're very fortunate to be part of a city that believes in this kind of growth, long-term growth, and takes strong action to ensure that connectivity and better leverage of talent and infrastructure takes place. I can tell you that I'm having many discussions with various community partners to ensure that Algonquin is there to help provide the talent pipeline for that future. Extending the LRT to Barrhaven will further support our ability to create human linkages between clusters of innovation and business across our city. Additionally, greater rail connectivity will help us meet our goal to reduce our carbon footprint. Before I end, this might be an appropriate time for me to let you know that Algonquin College, in partnership with the Pearlie and Rideau Veterans Health Center and the Ottawa Community Housing, hopes to be part of a solution that addresses not only healthcare needs of home and community where we serve in this area, but also affordable housing for the most vulnerable low-income seniors population. To summarize, the college wants to be an active partner in solutions that drive innovation, workforce development, as well as social and environmental sustainability. In other words, we're on board. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much for that, Claude. I don't see any questions on the board, but thank you for coming out and speaking to us today.
My pleasure.
We're at the final five, folks. So I'll tell you who's on deck first. We'll have Bruce Harvey, Film Commissioner, Miranda Gray, Quentin Rowe, Karen Paquette, and Alex Cullen. So Bruce, you have 5 minutes and the floor is yours.
Good afternoon and thank you, Council, for giving me the opportunity to speak on this matter. As Councillor Harder knows and Councillor Lieber, because he was on our committee at the time, we worked with the Barrhaven BIA when they did their study to look at what economic benefits could be created by creating a film studio and a soundstage campus and creative hub within Councillor Eglise Riding at the Greenbelt Research Farm. And when we first started looking at building the soundstage campus there, the accessibility to the LRT was a critical component for us going forward and being able to provide public transit that would go from all regions of the city, because our people that work in the film industry do live in Orleans. My own staff live in Orleans, and it's the accessibility to the site with public transit that is timely, so that you're not spending an hour and a half, 2 hours getting to work, especially after a 14-hour day trying to get home, was a critical component for it. So when we're looking at it, it was also very important for us to have close access to Algonquin College. We already have one program that's moving over to the Soundstage campus and Creative Hub that's moving there, which is the new film and television program, or film motion picture program. We have plans with the college to do more development at our site that would bring other faculties that are within the media development stage into the site, and that would become an ongoing back and forth between the two. So having the two stops, the one at the PN Sportsplex, which is right in front of where the Soundstage campus will be, and having the one at Algonquin is very critical to us. I don't want to speak about the public housing and all those issues that are there. One thing I would say, though, is that any design that has bends right in front of the soundstage would not be favorable for us. Trying to maintain reduced sound right at that site would be preferable to us. The design that has the elevated LRT that won't impact access to our site going off of Woodruff is something that's desirable for us. And having the LRT be there in particular is just, it's both aesthetically great for the film industry, as well as being an appropriate access point for our workers. I just want to say that having an LRT, and especially having subway stations like the one at that's at Baseline, is a very attractive thing for me going and promoting Ottawa as a filming destination for companies coming from all over North America. Big cities are the ones that have subway systems and LRT systems. It puts us on a playing field with a number of big communities when we're trying to attract production here. And the future development of our industry is something that's going to provide hundreds of jobs, hundreds of well-paying jobs for a variety of skill sets, people that are drivers, people that are manual laborers, people that are working in greenscaping. It's such a broad range of jobs that are out there that's going to benefit the whole community in Barrhaven and all across Ottawa. So having a timely access with the LRT, not delaying that access in an extended period of time, our Soundstage campus will be up and running in 2022. And as quickly as we can get the LRT to that site, the more effectively it can operate, in particular dealing with Algonquin College. Any questions you have, I'm happy to answer.
Great. Thank you very much, Bruce. I don't see any hands on the board. Oh, is your hand up, Councillor Lowe? Oh, you just have to click the little raise hand feature, and there you go. Perfect. Okay.
Thanks so much for your presentation, Bruce. I just want to thank you for all you do for arts and culture here in Ottawa. It's incredibly refreshing to have somebody like you at the head of this incredible organization. Just wanted to thank you.
Thank you. I think the just in closing, I'd say that City Council has been very supportive for our industry. It's been very supportive in getting the Soundstage campus up and running. There's been some misunderstandings as to how much money the city was going to put in, which was never the intent or where it was going to go. It was actually going to provide money to the city, the past proposals, but we're working hard at getting that up and running as soon as possible.
Great. Thank you again, Brutus. Really appreciate that. On to our next speaker, Miranda Gray.
Hi, I'm Miranda Gray. I'm speaking as a transit rider on this project. I can't support either of the two motions that are currently being discussed or recommending this proposal go forward to council at this time as written. My problems with this proposal is it comes from a pre-COVID area when we had decent transit ridership and we are not in that stage right now. So I have some concerns about whether LRT will go ahead in a reasonable time frame to make some of the elements of this still true. I am concerned about the pinch point and the fact that that pinch point has been known for at least since the rapid bus route opened to Barrhaven, and we have not addressed it earlier. I don't like that our city is assisting private developers in rent evictions, which is where I see this headed. However, the time to expropriate this land was probably when part of the backyards were taken to put up the sound barrier. My concern for the residents there is also quality of life when you have an elevated LRT so close to your back door. Those sites would not be permitted probably if they were being rebuilt based on their closeness and the sound issues you would have at the time. So I agree with all the residents that we do not have an adequate plan for moving them, but that is subject to city will. I agree with their points that why should they believe you when you're taking affordable land options out without replacing them? Every time you take one out of the city realm by putting something else there, you need to find appropriate land to put back in the plan or no one will believe that you have a plan. My other concern is simply that I just don't see this going ahead in a reasonable timeframe. So I support the staff and the work they have done, but the world has changed. And that means this proposal needs a bit of a rethink. I would like you to go ahead with the at-grade separations for safety reasons. $400 million strikes me as very little compared to what you'll get in a lawsuit if you've had a report that this work needs to be done and we have another major accident there. So I would like you to divide it so that part goes ahead. The LRT part is paused, and then we need to work out how to deal with the pinch point. And that involves several committees that aren't represented here at the table, including housing and including how you do consultations. Part of this is coming up because the consultation process we have is currently broken. And that's going to make the lawsuit, if there is one, more difficult because you can't prove that you did consultation with the tenants. Thank you for your time. Can't hear you, Chair.
Thank you, Miranda. We do have a question from Councillor Elshintieri.
Well, thank you, Ms. Gray, for your presentation, but I'm a little bit confused. You said you don't agree with neither motion from Councillor Lulof or Councillor Menard, and then you said I agree with the resident. Well, we heard from the resident, and most of the resident, actually, they agree with both motions, so I'm a little bit confused here. You're saying you agree with the resident, but yet you don't agree with the motions who the resident agreed with. So can you explain that to me?
Sure. I don't think we've necessarily heard the residents the same way. The most compelling point I think they made was that why should we believe you that you have a plan when there's no money in it and it's not currently before us? So yes, I believe that the intent is there, but there is no plan. And until there is a plan, I don't think you can honestly say that their needs are under consideration. So I don't believe just a holding pattern is appropriate for them. I don't believe either of these motions puts enough time and energy and focus in solving that problem. And the general proposal just assumes that you're going to expropriate the land, which is the worst option.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. And thank you, Miranda, for coming out and speaking so many times so eloquently today. On to our next speaker, we have Quinton Rowe.
I don't see Quentin on the call.
Okay, we'll go back around at the end in the eventuality that Quentin does show up. Next speaker is Karen Paquette. And I definitely see Karen in here somewhere.
Hello, my name is Karen Paquette. I appreciate the chance and the opportunity to speak in front of this council. I'm also a member of ACORN. More so, I am a member, a community member of Ottawa. And I had a whole talk prepared, but in listening to everybody and all the points, I'm going to probably cut some of it out. Ms. Gray, I agreed a lot with what she said regarding pre and post COVID. So I think a lot more discussion needs to be done now with regards to our different world. And I met with many of the Manor Village community members. And my biggest thing that I got from that was, in fact, the community. And as an early childhood educator, that sense of belonging, when we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs and how important it is to raise our children with a sense of belonging and safety and community, goes back to, building great leaders. And if you displace people that are already under stress and already have mental health issues that are not being addressed, we are creating another generation that is more at risk for homelessness. I think the money spent on this project, albeit, we all want to be trendy and we all want to be up to date with transportation and our beautiful city of Ottawa, the capital of Canada, it's wonderful. But, it goes back to our vulnerable. It goes back to how our government treats our vulnerable. Is it in a nurturing way or is it in an exploitive way? And again, I see it being exploitive. And we're not taking care of the vulnerable. We're not allowing them to have an opportunity of success. Mr. Menard's, I believe that we cannot displace these people, but as Mr. McDonald was saying, if it's a private company, which it is, and I have seen that the smart living apartments go for $1,300 for a student one bedroom. That's more than some people are paying for the two bedroom townhouse. And yet if that's going to be, if renovations and necessary things are not done to improve the building, then yes, that's not going to help those residents at all either. I think what's going to help the residents is Ottawa backing them and being behind them as a community, not just as homes. And, there's, in writing an email to city staff regarding this issue, what I got back was that it's, stage three isn't going to be happening for so long, so that residents will have time to prepare and have a smooth transition for moving. And I think all of us would agree that moving is one of the most stressful things, events in our lives, even if it is a good positive move, of which this would not be, unless the community is able to move as a community to a safe spot, to a property or properties that will have similar rents. And that isn't going to happen in the way things are going in Ottawa, unless, again, I go back to Ottawa, the government backing low rent That means we have to put as much money into affordable housing as we do into anything else for growth for this community, for this city. And if we don't back our citizens, all the infrastructure that goes on and all the money spent in that is not going to equal out. It's not going to balance. You know? So definitely I support Mr. Menard's motion. I think, unfortunately, there are other facts at play that's not going to, you know, really be.
Thank you, Karen. I'll give you 10 seconds to wrap up real quick, just to stay in your time.
Absolutely. I think we need to back the citizens of this city.
Great.
The vulnerable.
Thank you very much for coming out today. Seeing no questions, I'll move along to someone that is very familiar with City Hall, Alex Cullen.
There you go. Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Alex Cullen. I'm the president of the Federation of Citizens Associations. I think most of you are familiar with the FCA, so I won't go through introducing ourselves. We've been before this committee many times. So I'm here on a slightly different topic with respect to this report. While the FCA supports the eventual extension of LRT to the suburban communities of Barrhaven and Kanata-Stittsville, we are concerned about the deferral of remediating important safety issues as a result of this process, particularly at the Woodruff Via Rail fallow field area, which witnessed a horrific accident in 2013 involving a transitway bus and a Via Rail train that claimed 6 lives. It's now 7 years later, and it appears from this report it'll be another 15 years before this dangerous site where the transitway crosses the major Via Rail line due to be upgraded to high frequency will be addressed. Even the 15-year timeline is ambitious, given the teething pain of LRT 1, the unfinished construction of LRT 2, the impact of the pandemic on travel and employment patterns, and the current fiscal state of both our funding partners upon whose support this project depends, as both the federal and provincial governments face enormous deficits as a result of the pandemic whose end is not yet in sight. So in other words, it's more than likely that Barrhaven would not see LRT service until past 2040, even assuming it is ahead of the $1.85 billion Kanata-Stittsville LRT extension. I mean, you have to pick one, right? What's going to go first? That is far too long to leave such a dangerous situation at Woodruff Via Rail fallow field unattended, given the confluence of road traffic, transitway, and the Via Rail service there now. We ask, therefore, that you direct staff to bring forward grade separated solutions for this area, Woodruff, Via Rail, Fallow Field, ahead of the Barrhaven LRT EA. You've seen the staff proposal. They identified the projects. They put a number to it. They said it can advance ahead, $400 million. You can do it ahead of the full project. And we suggest that would be a very good priority to do. And so that we don't have to wait 20 years to have this problem for that intersection, that area there, solved. And that's my presentation.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Alex. Actually, that's a really good point on this safety element. Do I have any questions for Mr. Cullen today? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming out and speaking today.
Yep.
I'm just going to look back on the board real quick. Quinton Rowe Kelly, I assume, has not resurfaced.
No, I don't see him. I did have a request from Soloway Wright, mind you. I don't see Ursula on the call either.
Okay.
So let me just check with them. I see Councillor Fleury has his hand up.
Oh, I assume Councillor Fleury is really excited to have questions to staff. And that's why his hand went up. We'll just wait 2 seconds there, Councillor, and see if we're finish with the list.
Mr. Chair, what about if we take a 15-minute break and give everybody a chance to get organized before we go?
If it's the will of the committee, I'm fine. I need coffee myself. I'm dying here. So let's take a 15-minute break. We'll come back. If we do have those missing delegations, we'll allow them to speak. And then we'll move directly to questions of staff. So let's all reconvene at 10 after 1. Okay, everybody, it's now 10 after 1. And I'm just looking on the board here, and I'll look to guidance from Kelly. Kelly, should I go back through our list to confirm that we have a quorum?
I believe you have quorum on the screen.
Great. I can see people are moving, so they're real. So we don't have delegations. Solway, which is the lawyer for that property, did provide written materials. And Kelly, you can confirm that we put that all in the drive. Confirm that we have a quorum.
I believe you have quorum on the screen.
Great. I can see people are moving, so they're real. So we don't have delegations. Solway, which is the lawyer for that property, did provide written materials. And Kelly, you can confirm that we put that all in the drive.
Yes, that is shared. It's in the shared drive, has been circulated to councillors, and is on SharePoint.
Okay, and I think they had a strong indication they really supported option 3 and strongly were against options 5 and 6. I believe that was correct. Okay, so on that, we're going to questions to staff, and Councillor Fleury has like super speedy reflexes and gotten the board first, followed by Councillor Harder, and we'll keep moving down the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions. There were a number of recommendations or a number of options that were presented, and the Parsons team did ran us through those segments in the presentation. Just want to understand, maybe from Vivi, what we're asked of is to vote on options 6 as per the recommendations in the report. And then from your perspective, if it were to pass council, what would be next for this LRT segment?
Yes, the recommendation is to approve the alternative 6, which is the recommended plan that we presented. So it's on the west side of the right-of-way. So the next steps, other than finishing off the study, the city would be looking for funding, because the EA has to be completed before we can apply for funding if the program comes through. So typically, you know, the planning work has to be done.
Okay. So I guess now I'll turn my questions to, I guess it's the planning team around affordable housing. A number of delegations did raise the number of affordable lands that were being contemplated along the corridor. Could we get a staff perspective on this report as it relates to developable lands that are city owned or that the city plans to acquire to accelerate new affordable units?
I can speak to that about this project. At Knoxdale Station, there's some city property right there, so there will be a remnant because we're only taking a little strip for the light rail. So that is known city-owned property, which would be ideal for transit-oriented development because the station would be right there. There could be, we haven't looked at other areas along this corridor, but that is part of the motion in the report, because we've taken over a site at the end of the line where the maintenance yard would be, and that's the right location for the maintenance and storage facility. And through in our recommendation 3 and 4, we will endeavor to look for additional affordable housing sites as part of these 2 stage 3 corridors, meaning Barrhaven as well as the Kanata LRT. The earlier works that was done on identifying 20 sites for affordable housing was based along just stages 1 and 2 and the transitway corridor.
Okay, lots of questions follow up here. So the 20 sites that were identified as part of 1 and 2, are those still city owned and are we advancing those? Because I think one of the delegations did speak to removal of some of those sites and concerns around our ability to advance development on those locations.
So that exercise is about public lands. So some would be city owned and some would be other government owned property. And there were 20 sites identified, although 2 in the Orleans area were taken off the list temporarily. So they did not get approval, nor were they rejected until such time as the community plan is done. And then they would have an opportunity to be added onto the list. But for sure, our project affects one of the sites of the 20 that were originally proposed.
So basically, we're down to 17 of the 20 identified.
Well, the other 2 are just on hold for now. So it's not to say that they are down or removed. We're just awaiting the community design plan, which will be completed by next year. And these 2 sites were medium and longer term.
Okay. As it relates to the plan today for the EA, recognizing the stage 3 components, one of the speakers did raise the real estate angle, which is when we come down and build public transit, we bring value to those lands and likely will bring more density to those lands. So how, even for lands that we don't own, how are we advancing TODs and inclusionary zoning along these parcels?
Okay, well, these 2 parcels for Manor Village and Cheryl Gardens, just recently council approved an interim control bylaw. So that has set these 2 sites held from development for a year, which can be renewed for another year while the city undertakes a planning study of the area and how it would grow or how it would be developed there. So that's one aspect that's been taken. And so there's a plan of action right there. So for your other question about how else are we dealing with affordable housing? Sorry, Councillor, can you just repeat your other part of the question?
Well, it's just because we're bringing value, right? I think this connection's needed. Obviously, I support the intent of connecting more communities to transit, specifically the south of our city and the west as well, as those communities have grown and certainly are struggling to meet the transit needs. But we're providing more value for the landowners along the corridor. Are we getting ahead of that to build a transit-oriented development near the 7 points? And if so, in increasing the density? And if so, are we matching that with inclusionary zoning targets?
I'm quite sure that our official plan has policies regarding this with transit-oriented development. But if I could, is somebody from the planning department online to assist with this response?
Chair, it's John Manconi here. I've asked Steve Willis, who's on standby. I would suggest if we could, to Councillor Fleury on the planning questions, if you could give us a few minutes to secure Mr. Willis into the conversation, it would be very helpful.
It's a good idea. Maybe if you have other questions, Councillor, if you have other questions, did you want to go ahead and ask those first while we wait for Mr. Willis?
No, my remaining questions relate to those planning questions, Mr. Chair. Maybe I can come back on when he's available.
Absolutely, for sure. Great. Thank you, Councillor. Before we go to Councillor Eglai, just so people, if you're wondering, okay, what's happening here? It's questions and comments to staff, irregardless which motion. And then afterwards, we'll be voting on the Eglai motion, and then we'll be voting on the Menard motion based on the outcomes of the conversation. Councillor Eglai.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there were committee members on the list, and I think I'm perfectly fine following protocol, letting them speak first and have their questions. I think that's probably what Eli was going to raise, but I'm more than happy for that, and I'll just ask my questions when everyone else is done.
I almost thought you were a committee member. You've been a a part of this conversation so much today. Apologies. It's I'll go with Councillor Vice Chair Leeper.
Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification. You did say we will vote on both motion from Councillor Lulof on behalf of IGLAI, and is the other motion from Member Menard will still be valid if we vote on the first motion? Do we have legal to tell us if there's a different, fundamental difference between the two? I think we should have that information before we vote, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. I'll look to the clerk's office. We worked with the clerk this morning to discuss this, and that was my understanding of how we have to proceed. Maybe I'll get someone from the clerk's office to confirm that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I will note that the Councillor Eglai motion, in reading it again, does have the qualifying language, if the recommended alignment is approved. I would leave it with the members as to whether they wish to amend that to say it would proceed either way, but they are independent motions that can be voted on separately.
Great, and thank you for that, and thank you, Eli. I probably should have mentioned that at the beginning. So I had consulted already on that. So back to the board. We will go with Vice Chair Leeper.
Thanks, Chair. One of the things, the housing consideration is obviously a critical one. None of us want to bash forward with an alignment that is going to remove a lot of affordable housing. We also don't want to build an alignment that introduces a lot of inefficiencies or extra costs, et cetera. In my conversations with colleagues, with the residents, folks for the past couple of weeks now, I actually have a very high degree of confidence that the city, from the mayor's office on down, is committed to working with these residents to ensure that appropriate alternatives are available if we move forward with this. Appropriate is something that still needs to be decided. We have to decide what that actually looks like, but it's a conversation. And in fact, a city expropriation of this land for LRT purposes may be a better chance for these residents to preserve appropriate housing than letting the market play out over the next couple of years, given the current ownership dynamic. But if I were the residents, I wouldn't trust us either. Does this decision with respect to the alignment need to be made now? What are the timing considerations given, you know, the very long time frames ahead for actually getting something funded? Why are we making this decision today?
Thank you, Chair. The strategy is to be ready in the event that funding comes forward. You've done that with Kanata. You certainly would want to do this for this corridor so that you're ready. If stimulus funding or other funding comes forward, council has clearly indicated in their long view that they want to continue to invest in LRT. So this is about being ready. If you push it off, it's up to council in terms of what they want to do with timing. This is all about being ready for keeping the momentum going. Again, you're setting the pace in terms of doing what other jurisdictions want. You have an active rail line that's already opened and you're building the second phase. This would continue with that momentum to finish the critical stretches of these both the Kanata and the Barrhaven pieces, which you've heard from speakers and others, what it will do for your city in terms of moving forward. So it's about keeping that momentum going. When other cities have stopped with long pauses and not been ready for the funding, that's when you get long drawn out delays and problems in terms of a continuous system. The benefits of this stretch of this LRT is also very, very good for the city and for the system, economic development, housing, all types of housing, and moving forward, doing what we've all said we want to do, have a caring, inclusive city.
If we were to take 6 months and have some further conversations around the 600 meter pinch point, as it's been called, but we have the rest of the alignment in shape and can demonstrate that we've put significant work into that. Would that not serve to build confidence with other levels of government that we know what we want to do?
Councillor, the way I would answer that is this pinch point, and one of the speakers, I think it was Ms. Gray, spoke about it, has been around for decades. I can remember when the region was trying to plan the transitway in this corridor, same issues, difficult soils, lots of sewer conflicts and so forth. The Eglai motion gives you in essence exactly what you just asked for to figure out how we deal with that. The slippery slope you go down if you start to extract this pinch point from the equation, you know, our recommendation is going to be, you know, stop the project, send us with clear direction as to what you're trying to do and what principles and what technical outcomes you want, rather than doing it in chunks or piecemeals. It's a corridor, it's a rail corridor. The challenges have not changed. I think one or two of the previous public speakers have spoken about this. There's a lot of history to this site. I know like the back of my hand in terms of that community and back in my Nepean days, and Councillor Eglai knows that I've dealt in that space there, and Councillor Harder does too. It is a very difficult decision before you. I understand that, but 6 months doesn't get to what I think is the outcome that I've heard loud and clear from the mayor's office, the chair, the vice chair, yourselves, everyone that, you know, what are we going to do? What can we do for those that get displaced in that corridor? So that's why staff is in favor of the Eglai motion. It gives us that direction to work as a unified city team to look at options and to be ready in the event that stimulus funding or any funding comes forward so you could move forward with this important project.
Okay, I'll contemplate that as we listen to the rest of the questions. I do have some more technical questions. I just want to understand some of the challenges with respect to the alignments. There is a discussion about going below grade and the water table. How is this more challenging than the alignment that we're using underneath the Sir John A. Macdonald Parkway for stage two?
I'll ask Vivi and the technical experts to comment on that, please.
Yes, for this, it's just very unstable soils that we have here. And to go in any cut or any underground below grade alignment will, it's a huge risk for settlement of buildings, 250 meters on either side of the corridor. So that is very serious and it's not being recommended.
But is it different from our SJAM alignment?
The SJAM alignment, I can't speak to that. I don't have the details of the actual preliminary design and the geotechnical information there. So I can't speak to that. And I'm sorry, Councillor.
Okay. Again, with the below grade alignment, has been determined to be suitable for going through the Barrhaven Center area. Yes. Does it have different soil conditions and particularly different infrastructure conditions?
Yes, it's different in our presentation. We said it's the area that's north of Barrhaven that's problematic from a geotechnical perspective. Okay. We're able to build, for instance, Green Bank going underneath the rail line there. So the proposals that we have for our project will work in the Barrhaven context.
And then my last question with respect to the challenge is Knoxdale Station. If it's not in the location it's in, I think our consultant had spoken to a less than optimal location for that station. Can I just get some color on what that meant?
Mm-hmm. I can start and then I'll turn it over to our consultants to elaborate further. By not being on the west side of the corridor, and the other alignments would introducing those S-curves would push the station actually 45 meters to the north. So with that, is it Peter? Peter Stacey can take this on to elaborate further.
Actually, Vivi, it's Paul here. I can.
Okay, I'm sorry, Paul.
No worries. Yes, Councillor Chair, sorry. The location of Knockdale Station, as Vivi mentioned, it would push it back about 40, 50 meters, which in the scheme of things isn't a huge distance, but where in the recommended alignment the station is positioned gives it really good visibility for people approaching the station from along Knoxdale and Midhurst. It shortens the walk distance for people connecting from local transit. And it sort of, it creates that community focal point and reduces the amount of open space to the south of the station that the city would need to maintain.
Okay, so that doesn't sound like a huge showstopper.
Yep.
Okay. Those were my questions for the moment. Thanks, Chair.
Great. Thank you, Vice Chair. I'll move to Councillor Menard.
Mr. Chair, I saw, sorry to interrupt here. It's my, Councillor Fleury, I saw Mr. Willis on the screen a few minutes ago. I wonder if I can...
Great. Mr. Willis, are you there?
I am, Chair.
Hey, Steve. So maybe if it's okay, Councillor Menard, is it okay if Councillor Fleury asks a quick question related to planning?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Councillor Fleury.
Thank you, Councillor Menard and Chair. Thank you, Mr. Willis. My questions really relate to in phase one, we did a really good job of doing the TOD, and one of the lessons learned was around the inclusionary zoning aspects or challenges around that, and then the public sites that were later identified. Can you maybe explain to us as part of this phase three how your team is attaching some of those interests in ensuring that all the new density that would be provided near these stations would include inclusionary zoning integrated in the redevelopment plans?
So Chair, the inclusionary zoning project is underway. We are preparing the mandatory background study, which is part of the provincial regulations, and that work will be brought to council in 2021. It also requires the adoption of the new official plan, because you can only apply inclusionary zoning where you've designated major transit station areas in accordance with the new provincial legislation, and that's what the new official plan will do. So those two will come together, and the inclusionary zoning will be brought to planning committee for and council for approval in 2021 in the last quarter of the year we project at this stage of the game. Just warn council that it would be subject to appeal, so it would only come into effect after all appeals are exhausted. The background study will dictate what parts of the city have the economic conditions that meet the requirements to apply inclusionary zoning, and then what that would actually be. And my expectation is it would apply throughout the, it can only apply in transit station areas into the new provincial regulation, and it would probably apply to most of the areas in stage one initially, and then as stage two gets built, it could come into effect with later stages as well. We have to demonstrate the need in the technical study, and that's the work that's underway right now.
So can you clarify if parcels in this phase three would be included ahead of any potential rezoning efforts?
So council, its last council meeting of not the within the last two, has approved an interim control bylaw for this area, which puts a freeze on any development activity for a year, and it's extendable by council for an additional year to study the future land use designations that should apply to this area in light of this work and looking at the TOD opportunities. So that would come into effect after we've done a planning study. And I see a new planning study in the inclusionary zoning coming to council in tandem.
Okay. I think that's really where we need to put our focus, because to me, that's where the potential rests, is if we can define where the development should happen and through that protect affordable units, then, you know, these private lands that are at risk of being redeveloped, we protect any new increase in density with some affordable units. Maybe my last question to Mr. Willis on this is, as it relates to that your interdepartmental task force on housing, can you maybe just give us a status of that as it relates to all these efforts?
So the Interdepartmental Task Force is morphed into work that's called the Capital Planning Task Force under Ms. Gray's team, because affordable housing is part of community and social services. A city's real estate and planning teams continue to support that effort. We are going on the highest priority sites and working our way down to bring them into implementation strategies. And that is about linking up funding for development, figuring out whether it's a project that's delivered through a OCH or another party, and working our way down the list. So that group is continuing its work. And I believe Ms. Gray's intention is to bring a status report to Community and Protective Services Committee at some point in the next little while. Actually, the maybe Planning Committee as well. I'm sorry, I don't know which of the two, but we'll be brought for committee and council shortly on how our progress is going.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great, really good points there, Matt. We're on to, back to Councillor Menard, and then we have Councillor Dudas, Harder, and Egla.
Okay, thanks very much, Chair. And I'll try just to speak to the questions here that I've got, not so much the motion. I'll do that later on at wrap up. I'll have a couple things on it, but I just want to be clear what we're approving today. This is the functional design and the procedure with an EA, but it's not the approval of the full LRT stage 3 that would come at a later date in terms of financing, et cetera. So just want to clarify what it is being approved today.
Chair, today you're approving the functional plan, so the planning efforts to launch this project so it's ready to receive funding when it comes and to start the implementation process, which would be detailed design and so on. So this is the planning aspect, the front part of the project.
Okay, and when are you anticipating funding to come in for this project?
Well, this would be, we're dependent on federal and provincial funding, 100% of this project. And they're aware of this. It's been discussed. Stage 3 has been discussed for a number of years. So this is outstanding. We don't have timelines right now. It's just that doing this planning work gets us ready to sit down and have that conversation.
Okay. And my understanding is likely we're not going to see a build for, it could be 7 years to a decade. Is that accurate in terms of timeline, in terms of when we would see this built?
What I think it's John.
I think it's speculating at this point. Look how quickly stage 2 came together in terms of funding, and we quickly moved forward. Again, I just reiterate, it is about being ready when the funding does come. So to say it's 7 or 10 years or any number right now is sheer speculation on staff's part. We know that the mayor, the city manager, everyone is having active conversations about investing in the future across the city.
Okay, thanks for that. And just back to my first question, when would we see how this would be procured, whether it be the city procuring it itself and taking on the project in terms of a design build? When would that decision be made in the city to move forward?
We would bring that back to you, to council, when the funding has come together. And I can tell you that we're reaching a point right now where we're having serious thoughts about how do we procure things. We have an extensive amount of rail expertise that's building out. It depends. It could be a mix. It could be a P3. It could be a hybrid P3. It could be the alliance model, which is all the talk now coming over from Australia and Europe. We got to look at a lot of things. You've seen the economic statements that's been put out by the federal government in terms of borrowing rates and so forth. So things are very fluid in terms of how we would procure it and build it. We're not there yet, but I would say everything's on the table, and we'd be at we'd bring the appropriate recommendations to council for consideration and direction.
Okay, thanks for that. In terms of some of the station logistics, things like covering of stations, bathrooms, et cetera, when is that fully supposed to be decided by council?
those are the details set of the project for the next stage when there's funding and we get into the design aspects of the project.
Okay, that's great to hear. So safe to say we've got quite a bit of time before some of those pieces occur. I wanted to go back to specifically on the report and the location of some of these stations. Some of them are next to empty fields that we see now, NCC land. I'm wondering, are there concerns about where we're locating in terms of whether it's in some more dense housing versus areas where we're not going to see buildup in terms of some of those stations?
So apart from the Nepean Sportsplex site, because it's on one side, it's the green belt. On the other side, we have the Sportsplex itself, which can be redeveloped and have more intensification there. I think most of our projects are where our stations are located become catalysts for other development and intense transit-oriented development, which is what we want. So we're the catalyst for some of these things.
Okay, no, that's great. And I mean, I'm supportive of a project extension here. Obviously, I want to hold off on one piece of this because I think it makes better sense for residents there to be having an understanding of what they're going to experience, as well as the owner of the land and the city and city council as a whole. But the rest of it, I see as being quite positive. I do have a couple other questions, Chair. It was raised during delegations as well regarding the Via Rail tracks through Barrhaven. I'm just hoping to get staff comment on the grade separations there. The comment made that we should be prioritizing that. Can you give us some feedback on that?
Our project identified that these rail safety grade separations can be done separately. So that's an opportunity for council. If you choose to go that route, then it can be done. We've done the work to analyze that. So it could be done. And if we still have the Southwest Transitway, then the buses would run on it. And in the future, the tracks can be put into the structures and the trains would then move through. So it's there. We identified an opportunity to separate it out, but it's part of this whole study.
Okay, I think the comments were made well, and I think we need to be focusing on that given what's occurred there. So I appreciate that answer. The last thing I'll just mention, Chair, before handing it back to you is the motion that I have forward on the Woodruff alignment, I think is prudent in this case. We felt rushed in other cases in approving LRT. This is one we do not need to feel rushed today. And that is one where we need to take our time to get this right, listen to those residents, come back with Councillor Eglise's plan in place, but before that decision is made, and to review the other alignments there. From what I've seen, Chair and others, the options 3 and 4 are not far off. In fact, this project could be about 2% cheaper. And now there's operational issues that happen, but nothing that can't be overcome, particularly with where Knoxdale Station is. And the slow start and stop that'll be coming into that station in terms of turns and wheel alignment. The other thing we need to consider is how is this affecting our new official plan? Are we going to be building up to make sure that we've got affordable housing in that area? Is that a potential in the future? Those are the sorts of questions we should be asking ourselves as well. It's not just simply about whether it's on the median or 7 meters away. What do we want here in terms of our new official plan? The other point I'd make is, and I'd ask the question to staff, is there doesn't seem to be costing in this report. I haven't seen how much money this is going to cost us, both on the functional design part, so the actual, what the report is approving. Again, it's not approving stage three. It's approving the functional design. It's approving other pieces that go forward, the EA, but there's a number of other decisions that come years down the road on this. So why aren't we seeing full costed numbers in this report? We're seeing the smiley faces and the frowny faces. I appreciate that for simplicity, but I also want to see those figures and those numbers on the difference in cost and that breakdown. We just didn't see that today. And so I'm wondering where that is.
As per our presentation this morning, the cost for the elevated options, because definitely the below grade options are far more expensive and with all the risk and so on. So I'm just speaking about the elevated options now. In our slide deck, we mentioned that there's a slight difference of two or so percent between the elevated options. So cost is one aspect. The other aspect is the ongoing, continual operation for decades, because that's what this project is about. We're not recommending alignments 3 or 4. Our recommendation is for 6. And our presentation talked about the reasons why. So so if it is council's direction to stop this project and revisit, I think we would still end up with the same recommendation from a very strong technical perspective, and the operations for transit, as well as our corridor for the arterial road, which gives it the opportunity, leaves available the opportunity for it to become a complete street in the future. So that's it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I think if it was option 6 that we came back with, at least that would give us the opportunity to make sure that we have buy-in from those residents and an understanding of what compensation, if it's not going to be there for them, for example, they're not happy with that outcome, then if they can voice it then. But to this point, that's why I'm saying we're pushing this ahead far too quickly on that one alignment piece when there's more work to be done there before saying we're barreling ahead with that one particular option. So I do appreciate staff's work on this. I had a chance, Chair, to meet with staff last week on this. I did inform them that the motion was coming and, you know, sent a copy. It was late, certainly, but that's how we've been. We've had Acorn coming in to speak with us last week and other residents coming in. So that's the nature of committees. But we did send this in advance. This was provided in advance as well, Chair.
So, Councillor, just real quick, at the end of the 5 minutes, and I assume you'll want back on the board at the end to wrap up on your motion. So at this point, I have Jan and I got Keith that are not part of the board. So with the committee's indulgence, we'll have Jan go first with her questions and comments. Keith will wrap up on the wonderful motion he's put forward. And then Sean, if you put your hand back up, I think that's how we'll end this off. Councillor Harder.
Well, thank you, Chair Tierney. It was close to 20 years ago at the beginning of the century that a partnership led by Minister and MP David Pratt, Minister and MPP John Baird, and myself brought equal distributions of $13 million to the table for Woodruff and Fallowfield. It was not enough. And I can tell you that it was not enough because of the questions I'm now hearing from some of you about the soils, about the incredibly high pressure water table. You heard about the geological issues with it being 75 meters in some cases below the ground to the rock base. It was, back in all those years ago, they stopped counting the money when I think it was about $160 million as opposed to the $39 million that was anticipated. And with the help from VIA, they were able to put the transitway in, widen the roads at grade with certain restrictions. But Barrhaven has been well served with the segments of the Southwest Transitway that have been constructed. This transit link provides Barrhaven residents with access to major employment, our universities and colleges, as well as shopping and entertainment. Transit's goal to help shape Barrhaven by allowing people and families to get by with less reliance on cars, save on parking at their place of work, and delay the need for roadway infrastructure across the Greenbelt is important, if not critical. But the reality of the piece of the transit spine currently operational is incomplete, and that's the spine through Barrhaven. Certainly, Fallowfield Station is a gateway to Barrhaven with the usually overfilled park and ride and the integration with the Via Rail station. Unfortunately, this is also the location of the devastating bus train crash 7 years ago, September 18th, 2013, that impacted all of Barrhaven and our city. Of the $3 billion price tag associated with this investment, over $400 million is for significant safety investments at Woodruff Transitway and Woodruff Avenue and Fallowfield Crossings in the form of grade separations. In recent years, as the city has been transforming from our successful BRT to LRT, Barrhaven Transit users suffered with the decreased service and reliability of the system, particularly the 95 as it traveled all the way south of the Jock River. The Barrhaven Transit Forum was held to highlight the issues, and along with the Barrhaven BIA, the Move Barrhaven Avance program was undertaken to help build all transportation issues in Barrhaven, present and future. The completion of the EA is a critical step towards Barrhaven's sustainability. We have all known since the 1980s that when Ottawa reached about a million people, it would be time to convert to light rail tunnel through the and a tunnel through the downtown. Here we are, right on time. In parallel, Barrhaven is now approaching 100,000 residents, is rapidly building a strong employment base and needs LRT. By the way, with the amazing growth in jobs and industry like Amazon and ABIC, we also need to add the ramps to the Barnsdale overpass, build a new interchange on the 416 at Strandard, and extend the new Green Bank realignment south to Barnsdale. With the approval of this EA, we can look forward to making transit safer at Fallowfield Station, planning and implementing our Barrhaven downtown, and increasing the reliability of transit for Barrhaven and the City of Ottawa. This will improve connectivity across our city, but also provide the much needed opportunity to expand shuttle service east and west to provide those 15-minute communities we all envision. Thanks, everybody. I hope you'll support this very important project that's been in the wings, I guess, for decades now. And I hope that I can count on your support. I have another meeting to go to. That's why I did my whole spiel at once. Thanks very much.
Great. Thank you very much, Jan. That was wonderful. So at this point, I'm going to go to Councillor
Eglot. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a few questions before I get to the motion, if that's all right. Vivi, we've heard a lot this morning, and I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. So we heard that 120 homes are going to be impacted by option number 6. Can you maybe explain to the committee what the breakdown, because I think they're left with the impression that the 120 homes is just in one location. Can you maybe explain how that's all going to work?
Yes. So for the pinch point, that's a segment. There are three properties, but owned by two property owners. Manor Village, which is identified as number one on one of those slides, the parcel one, is owned by Smart Living. And there, our records show that it has 133 units, of which 60 would be affected by our project, because those are the units that back onto the corridor. Then Cheryl Gardens make up parcels 2 and 3 on our slide deck, and that's owned by Era Investments. There are 72 units there, of which 60 will be affected. So there's a greater impact on the Cheryl Gardens in terms of units and also the percentage of land that we would need from them. Still a 20-meter strip, but greater impact on the Cheryl Gardens site.
And the large green piece of property by Beechcliff, who owns that?
We do. The city owns that.
Okay, and are there any plans for that piece of property at this point in time?
It's been preserved for our transit transportation corridor, so light rail in this case, but there will be residual, and of course we would want to see, with a station being there at Knoxdale, that we would want to see this the site developed.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. There's also been some discussion around notice within the community. How were the various property owners and residents notified? Was it by way of door-to-door buck slip, or what did the project use?
Yes, so public consultation is very, very important in all of our projects. So we try to work very hard at reaching out to communities and residents. So we've had two open houses, and plus we have consultation group meetings, and that's with business groups, with community association groups or representatives. So Manordale Woodville Community Association is part of our invitees for our public consultation group. So they've received all of our information on all of our project, all the work that we've done, and invitations and all that. So that's always gone out. For our events, we've had them in newspapers as advertisements. We had notice through Facebook and through Twitter, on the project website as well. And we did send out the buck slips. For the last round, there were 18,000 buck slips, and we hired a service provider to deliver those. So that was done. And of course, the website for the second round, we had over 5,000 views of the materials that we had there. And we've also had a lot of media interest in our project. So, you know, we tried our best to get the message out, to invite people to participate.
Now, we also heard today that certain options would be, certain options would be cheaper than option number six. Is that accurate, or I'm just trying to wrap my head around that, because cost is obviously a factor. So are the options cheaper, or certain things not being factored in, or how does that work?
Yes. Again, I'll be speaking about the elevated options rather than the below grade. In our presentation, we mentioned it's about a 2% difference. So with the ones that have to come into the roadway right of way, so that introduces, you know, two sets of curves, so that's there's some more construction expense there, including some of the utilities, you know, where we have to put the piers for the bridge. So our project, our recommendation, alignment six, is not the least expensive. It's not the lowest cost, but because it is a little bit easier to build because it's straight. So on the construction side, it may be a little bit less, but then we also have to roll in the property acquisition cost, and that's why it ended up not being the least expensive.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I have a couple of quick questions for the clerk, I guess. You had indicated that the current owner of one of the properties, Smart Living, had submitted a letter, and you, Mr. Chair, had summarized it somewhat. I'm wondering if, for public consumption, everybody listening in, did the letter speak to at all the landowner's intentions with regard to redevelopment? Can the clerk's office share that, or through the chair?
Mr. Chair, we would have to get back to you on that one. I will fully admit to not having read all of the written submissions in detail.
Okay, no, that's fine. If you could share that. And then the other, Caitlin, while you're on the line, you had made a comment about the motion that Councillor Luoff brought on my behalf, having qualifying language about should option six be approved. I'm open if you think that should be amended in some way to make it a more effective motion. I have no concerns around that, but I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Mr. Chair, I'm in your hands and in that of those of the movers, in that whether the intent of this motion is that the working group be struck regardless of whether council approves the alignment in accordance with option six or not.
So I think the intent, Caitlin, is that if an option was approved that didn't impact on the three parcels of property, then and the homes on them, then we wouldn't need a working group. So that's where does that make sense?
Mr. Chair, it does, and then I recommend that your wording is sufficient for those purposes.
Okay, I thank you for the clarification, and just very briefly, Mr. Chair, on wrap up, I think the motion that Councillor Luoff brought forward on my behalf, a lot of work went into that, a lot of discussion with staff. I think it's a balanced motion. And I get that the community is concerned about whether or not, you know, the city can be trusted or not trusted. Councillor Liepert indicated he thought that they could, and then he said he wasn't sure that they could. But I think that was partly in jest. I can say from discussions with all of the stakeholders, all of the senior city managers of the various departments, there is a very strong will to finding a solution to this, a very strong will. An EA is kind of a clunky device to talk about housing. It talks about soil conditions. It talks about water tables, you know, things of that nature. But I can say very publicly that everybody I met with, from representative of the mayor's office to Mr. Manconi to Vivi Chi to Steve Willis, Donna Gray, Stefan Jaguar, all of them recognize the issue. All of them want to find a solution to the issue. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to tap into that passion that we heard this morning from so many of the delegates, Mr. Chair, to engage them in the process as well and see the promise or the possibility of what could come out of this. And that in no way diminishes, as I said earlier, the impact that of having this uncertainty over their heads. That cannot be a comfortable feeling at all. And it's one that I think we need to move to alleviate as soon as we can, which is why there is a finite time to getting a report back to committee. So I think the will is there. I think we have some of the best people in the city engaged on the file. I think from what I've heard from my colleagues this morning, they want to fix the problem as well. So there's the political will to help staff and the community when they come forward with ideas to move those ideas forward. And so again, it is a balance though. It allows, you know, further discussion and it allows further engagement. And I'm hoping we can tap into that passion we heard today, because we heard some really phenomenal stories from some excellent spokespeople on behalf of the community. And I wanna continue to work with those people, wanna work with those residents, find out what is going to resolve the issue for them. And so I would ask people to keep that in mind. And I thank all my colleagues, some excellent questions asked today about cost and feasibility and every other aspect of this project. So I think we've had a good discussion, and I'll leave it at that, and I'll leave it in your hands, because I don't have a vote today one way or another. But thank you for allowing me to speak to the matter, and thank you for listening to my residents. I appreciate that.
Great. Thank you very much, Keith. On to the final wrap-up, Councillor Menard.
Okay, great. Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks for the conversation. As I say, I appreciate all the work that's gone into a whole lot of this, and I'm in favor of a bunch of what's in this report. I think the motion that I put forward would allow for the approval of the rest of that report. It would make sure that we have a plan for this area and that the residents are being, before councillors in a position, that residents are put in a position where they feel confident in what's coming forward before council makes a decision. And right now that plan doesn't exist. It doesn't have a resolution. And so we have residents that are concerned without having those assurances. The elevated options, which we've spoken about, those three different elevated options as presented, should be further considered. I look at the reasons that staff have given us, and there's really threefold: the roadway right-of-way, the potential for some minor passenger discomfort as you move one and then back to the other, and traffic detours during construction. I don't think that those justify the expropriation of these homes without those folks buy-in and agreement. It may not be perfect, but you need to have more buy-in agreement than we do today. And so imagine how you'd feel if your own home was in this situation with this level of uncertainty. You don't know if you're going to be compensated. You don't know if there's going to be another place for you that's going to be the same rent, that you're going to be next to these families that you've grown up with or that you live beside now, and the community that you live in. You don't know any of those things. And
a group of people's.
And so to think about, what a truly caring city would like to see happen in an ideal situation, and that is to take the time that we've got here. There is not a rush on this. we felt rushed in other decisions on LRT, and that has come back to haunt us. We should not feel rushed on this. This is a minor change that would have staff go and work with those residents and come back to this committee with a final resolution that we can all get behind. Instead of where it is now, putting us in a position to expropriate these places without a plan in place where we've got more agreement. And so I support the Egbine motion, and I'll be supporting that today. And that can and should happen with this motion as well. Both of those should be passed today, and we should pass the main report. So I urge you to think about it if you were in this situation and the level of uncertainty that exists here for those residents and what we can do. There's no reason why we can't do this type of work before coming back to committee, and would be in a fine position, if not a better position, if we did that work. Well, thanks very much, Chair, and back to you.
Great. Thank you very much, Councillor Menard. Just before we go to a vote, I did want to offer a couple of quick comments. First of all, we've actually had a really good discussion today, and I think everyone's quite correct. We heard many, many stories from people that it's a village. And on that front, we look at when Keith came to me quite a while ago, a couple weeks ago, and said, I'd like to meet and discuss this further. There's been a lot of meetings in between. I know that there's a lot of passion and the word will. It definitely, Keith said that, and he's quite correct. There's a lot of will to get a solution of some sort. I think we're going to have a very interesting discussion at the end of 2021 with some of the results that do come back. And certainly while there's a lot of concern around smart living and what is their exact plans, there is still quite a bit of runway left. And I'm very hopeful, and I feel confident that we will see some good work that will come back. And let's face it, next year, I think that's when the fur is going to fly. That's when we have more of that information that we're looking for. Many of these same discussion points that took place today will be relived there once again. Now, when it comes to staff, they always guide us the best way they can. And I'm not saying staff is always correct, but I always heed their warning and look at what they're providing information, why they're doing it. The discussion around shovel-ready projects, as you know, the federal and provincial government want people to be in place. If you're not prepared, you're not going ahead and you're not getting any money. So staff have certainly recommended and worked, obviously, on the main motion, but also on Councillor Ruloff/Eglise motion, and I'll be supporting that motion because it is the staff-supported motion. That being said, at this point, I'll turn to Kelly. I'm going to call yeas and nays in the order of the Eglise motion and second the Menard motion. Kelly?
Councillor Ruloff?
Yes.
Councillor Dudas?
Yes.
Councillor El Shantiri?
Yes.
Councillor Deans? Councillor Fleury?
Yes.
Councillor Menard?
Yes.
Councillor Kitts?
Councillor Kitts? Yes.
Okay. Councillor DeRuze?
Yes.
Councillor Hubley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Leeper?
Yes.
And Chair Tierney.
Yes.
That one carried.
Great. Thank you. And on to the Menard motion. Yeas and nays, please.
Okay. Councillor Ruloff.
No.
Councillor Dudas.
No.
Councillor El Shantiri.
No.
Councillor Deans, Councillor Fleury.
Yes.
Councillor Menard.
Yes.
Councillor Kitts.
No.
Councillor DeRuze.
No.
Councillor Hubley.
No.
Councillor Leeper.
Yes.
And Chair Tierney.
No.
So that lost 7 nays to 3 yeas.
Great. And on the main motion, is the main motion carried?
So, yeah, Chair, can you just separate for me the first item on the main motion? I don't want to vote for the alignment. I want to vote for the rest of the project, but the alignment piece, I can't vote for it with the expropriations.
Great. Kelly, can you note that dissent on that one item?
So, it's just the first item. The rest of it, I'm good with.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you very much, Councillor.
Thank you.
Noted. And again, on the main motion itself, with the dissent noted for the alignment on Menard, is that carried?
Carried.
Carried.
Thank you.